Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
Former Vice President Al Gore is endorsing Howard Dean for the Democratic presidential nomination, adding momentum and political prestige to Dean's front-running campaign. 5 weeks before Iowa's kickoff caucuses, Gore is appearing with his former party rival in New York City's Harlem neighborhood before flying with Dean to Cedar Rapids, Iowa for a formal endorsement, several Democratic officials said Monday on a condition of anonymity. Dean will then fly to New Hampshire in time for the final Democratic debate of the year. A car bomb attack in a barracks near the northern city of Mosul early Tuesday wounded 31 American soldiers, mainly with flying debris, the military said. The injuries were not life-threatening. The attack occurred when a car drove to the gate of the base of the 3rd Brigade of the 101st Airborne Division in the town of Talifar, 30 miles west of Mosul, spokesman Major Trey Kate said. Guards opened fire on the vehicle and it blew up. A total of 31 soldiers were wounded, mostly by debris and flying glass. None of the injuries were life-threatening, Kate said. Republican Bill Janklo, a dominating figure in South Dakota politics for nearly 30 years, was convicted of manslaughter Monday for speeding through a stop sign at a rural intersection and colliding with a motorcyclist. Janklo quickly announced he will resign from Congress on January 20th, the same date he is scheduled to be sentenced. He could get up to 10 years in prison. Jurors in the congressman's boyhood hometown convicted Janklo of second-degree manslaughter, reckless driving, running a stop sign, and speeding for the August 16th crash. They killed Randy Scott, 55, a farmer from Hardwick, Minnesota. Prosecutors said Janklo was traveling more than 70 miles per hour in a white Cadillac when he crashed with Scott's Harley-Davidson. Rocker Ozzy Osbourne underwent emergency surgery at a hospital in Britain after suffering serious injuries in an all-terrain vehicle crash on the grounds of his estate at Buckinghamshire, his publicist said on Monday. During examination, doctors found that Ozzy had broken his collarbone, 6 ribs, and a vertebrae in his neck, according to his publicist. The injuries are not considered life-threatening. The 55-year-old rocker was injured while riding the all-terrain vehicle during a day off from promoting his new single. More news after this.
Military veterans deserve better. They must wait endlessly for basic health care from the Department of Veterans Affairs. If you or a military veteran you know is one of the many heroes waiting for VA health care, the American Legion wants to tell your story to your elected officials in Washington, D.C.
A dog from Middlesex County is probably feeling like a lucky pooch, though she smelled like trash, after being rescued from among 40 tons of household waste in the back of a garbage trailer. The dog, plucked from the garbage truck at the Edgeboro landfill, was badly shaken but unharmed from her ordeal. The dog was taken to a local kennel, where she has taken to another kennel resident, a one-eyed pit bull.
For IE America Network News, this is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Hey, Sneezy, go to sleep.
I can't.
You could if you take NyQuil. It'll help your symptoms. So you'll sleep great. You know, like you do when you cuddle on the couch with a warm fleece blanket, a cozy fire, and a chick flick.
Now that's my kind of sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Give me that.
NyQuil, the nighttime sniffling, sneezing, coughing, aching, stuffy head, fever, best sleep you ever got with a cold medicine. Use as directed. Now try new and improved Liquicabs.
Dick Cheney, Rummy Rumsfeld, Colin Powell, and Condi Rice aren't the only fierce hawks in George W.'s warmongering government, and the Pentagon is not the only federal force that Bush has unleashed to attack a foreign foe in the name of defending the homeland. Here's the name of another hawkish generalissimo, Mark B. McClellan. Who? Okay, Mark's a dimmer light in George's galaxy of self-styled tough guys and gals, but he's no less committed to Bushko's agenda of global empire, in which all other countries are expected to do our bidding, or else. McClellan is Bush's commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration, and to protect you and me, he says, he has launched his own war against a rogue nation that he says threatens the very safety of the American people, Canada. Canada? A people so gentle that their national flag features a maple leaf? What threat are they? Well, Huff's Generalissimo McClellan, Canadian pharmacies sell prescription drugs at prices 30 to 50% cheaper than what drug makers sock us with here in America. So? Well, he says, online businesses in our country are allowing America's consumers to buy their medicines through Canada rather than paying the rip-off prices charged here in the homeland. So? Well, he sputters, the drug industry does not like this, so it must be stopped. Thus we have the remarkable sight of our FDA commissioner attacking Canada so the drug giants can keep overcharging Americans. Of course, McClellan claims that is for our own good because, he says, those dastardly Canadians might be shipping unsafe drugs to us. In retort, the Canadians note that practically all of the medicines they ship are made by American companies under the FDA's own supervision and that Canada has excellent drug safety laws. This is Jim Hightower saying, Mark's not defending us. He's protecting the drug price gougers, who happen to be one of Bush's top campaign contributors.
Brendan was spending the afternoon helping me pick up furniture for the new place.
The ladies are doing a little furniture shopping, are they?
That's scary. I hope you didn't make any choices without a professional.
Beanbag chairs for everybody.
God help us. Bearskin rug.
I put the car in swinger, baby.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
When you're swallowing whole life's life,
here, right now, Mike Malloy.
Well, good evening, truth seekers. Hold on, I think I have to sneeze. Oh, I hate that. I hate that feeling. I hate that feeling. Dennis Kucinich in our second hour after his appearance along with eight other Democratic contenders at the University of New Hampshire in Durham, New Hampshire for the debate tonight. Dennis will join us at the beginning of next hour. And it's a short night for us. We're going to have a two-hour program tonight, and I'm going to go home and get back on the IV. We thought about just not coming in tonight, but since we had Dennis Kucinich booked, we thought we'd better. So we're only going to be here for 2 hours tonight. Further proof that there is a God. Have y'all had any colds yet this year? Have you had any of these viral colds? Isn't this fun? Huh? Sad note in the Democratic Party today, the death of Paul Simon, former senator from Illinois, one of the most decent people ever to serve in any branch of government in this country. The bow-tie-wearing missionary son is the way the Associated Press describes him, and aptly. He was a newspaper owner. He was a journalist and then became a two-term U.S. senator, presidential candidate. He died today after one day after undergoing heart surgery. He was 75. He had a bypass and heart valve surgery in Springfield, Illinois. So, sad announcement. Paul Simon died today. In Texas, the Speaker of the Texas House of Representatives is, how to put this, under fire? Would that be the right way to say it? And his pride in the state of Texas is being questioned. What he did, what this moron did, he decorated the Texas House of Representatives floor with a giant made-in-China plastic Christmas tree. Texas, right? Where they grow Christmas trees or pine, whatever the hell they are. But he has this giant made-in-China plastic tree put up. And the state's tree growers are Thoroughly pissed and crying bah humbug. It's a 15-foot polyvinyl chloride tree. Doesn't that sound Christmassy, Kathy? You can almost smell the polyvinyl chlorides or something. I don't know. When I think of Christmas trees, I think of smelling pine. But this moron, this is, well, what's his name? Oh, my God. Tom Craddock, Republican, of course, from Midland, Texas, of course. He is the Speaker of the House of Representatives in Texas, so he puts up a 15-foot polyvinyl chloride tree made in China. Now, this tree is a top-of-the-line plastic model. It came with 3,500 lights and a retail price of $3,400. It was donated to his wife, Nadine Craddock, by a store in Austin that she frequents. Don't you just hate them? I mean, have I mentioned yet tonight how much I hate these people? I haven't. 11 minutes into the program, and I just mentioned it. Okay. The flu vaccine, lack thereof, we don't know yet if the flu vaccine is missing or if it's just in transit to various distribution points. 80 million doses were prepared. And the two manufacturers have nothing left. Now, what I have is not the flu. I've already determined that. It's just a bad viral cold. But have you heard about the deaths and the sickness this flu is causing? New York Times today says that experts knew back in March that this new potentially formidable strain of the flu virus was starting to circulate. And yet the two manufacturers designated to provide flu vaccines decided to stick with an older formula, an older, I won't say obsolescent vaccine, but one that those of us have gotten flu shots this year, that's what we got. We did not get a flu shot for this type that is circulating and making people sick and killing people. Now, normally, is that the word to use in this sentence? Normally, 36,000 people a year die in America from the flu. I guess so. I guess it works. Normally, 36,000 Americans die a year from flu, and about 100,000 of us go to the hospital. But the influenza virus constantly mutates. It evolves. It uses Darwinian theories of natural selection without realizing that's what it's doing. The Bush administration doesn't believe in that nonsense. So every February, since the influenza virus does mutate, does evolve, every February, experts in this country get together. They're brought together by the government. This is the way it's always been. To estimate, to try to figure out which strains of the influenza virus will be dominant in the next season, which we're in right now. And which strains of the influenza virus ought to be included in a vaccine. But you see the problem here? Since the Bush crime family believes that God created the heavens and the earth in 7 days, and everything was done, there's no such thing as evolution. Well, then, by God, flu vaccines cannot evolve. They can't mutate. There is no such thing. It can't be done. It's an impossibility. So this year, when they all got together, the medical establishment, depending on the Bush crime family for their grants and the National Institute of Health and so on and so forth, they say, well, look, there may be a new virus coming here, but let's pretend like there isn't, because we don't want to piss off the Bush crime family. If we piss off the administration, if we piss off Tommy Thompson and tell him, look, evolution is flowering with the flu virus, then our request for grant money for other research will be tanked. Now, I'm just guessing at this, but doesn't this make sense to you? An administration that does not believe in evolution, then how can they believe when the scientists come to them and say, look, this thing is evolving. It's mutating. Isn't that what mutation is? Is it, Kathy? You're a biology person. Mutation is evolution, right? Well, what is it then? Open your mic. You don't have to sit there in silence. It's a form of evolution.
I'm nauseous. but besides that, no, mutation is one of the features of evolutionary change. It's one of the necessary steps in adaptation.
Okay.
You don't have adaptive change. Mutations are random events that are fortuitous, that just happen to facilitate natural selection. you cannot have evolution without mutations, but mutations do not always precede evolution.
That's exactly what I was trying to say.
Oh, okay.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to go throw up now.
But the Bush crime family does not believe in mutation or evolution or whatever the hell it was you said. It's difficult being married to a college graduate. It really, really is. So when the scientists got together this year and tried to decide, they said, look, this thing is mutating, but let's keep that quiet. For God's sake, don't mention that to anybody in the Bush administration. So let's just go with what we've been using. Well, now you see the result. Now you see the result. We have an unprotected population out here. Now, they're saying that the flu shot that contains... antivirals for three of these viruses. No, not antivirals. What am I trying to say, Kathy? Never mind. Don't open your mic. I don't want you to throw up. It protects you. Again, it's to stimulate you. What the hell? Three different kinds of flu you're protected against, but it's the fourth kind that you're not protected against, and that's the one that is flying around this country. This is not funny stuff. This is really, really very, very serious. But does it not reflect an attitude from the top of this administration that science only is applicable if it corresponds perfectly with their political agenda? Their political agenda says there's no such thing as evolution. Evolution means mutation to some degree. If you remember what Kathy just said, I don't, but I think she said something about it. These people don't believe in that. Therefore, go with the old vaccine. You understand what I'm saying? So what the New York Times said today editorially is this doesn't work. This makes no sense. How is it that even though they knew this flu vaccine was on the horizon because it was showing up it was emerging in Asia, Europe, and various parts of North America and was apt to become a dominant strain by this winter. Hello, here we are. We're in the winter. This, what is it? Fujian strain. Unbelievable. This is just one of those little sidebar stories. You know, we all sit back and say, oh, damn, we're being attacked by this flu virus. Oh, my goodness. Oh, this is awful. And if you follow the story back far enough, you find out that this non-scientific attitude on the part of this stinking government that controls this country right now is part and parcel of the fact that we don't have a flu virus or a flu vaccine that will fight this virus. That makes perfect sense to me. I don't know if it makes sense to you or not, but it makes perfect sense to me. Now, I want to talk a bit tonight, and I actually want to get some input from you about Al Gore's announcement. It got has media and the Democratic Party... Just everybody is just rushing around, bumping into things today. Have you noticed that? Staying in bed all day and watching CNN and MSNBC, I was just astonished. That's the most television I have watched in I don't know how long. But they're all going nuts, aren't they? They're all the candidates are going crazy. Everybody is flopping around. The Democratic Party is in total disarray. I got an email here from Raymond in Cement City, Michigan. He says, Mike, we can see one reason why Al Gore didn't become president after the last election. It's bad judgment. To endorse Dean at this point in the campaign? Question mark, question mark, question mark. The biggest thing Dean has going for him, Raymond writes, is that he started early. General Wesley Clark is the best candidate to unseat Bush. He can win on, quote, we can do better, end quote. The other candidates must depend on the economy and the Iraq conflict getting worse by election time. And then he goes on, Raymond goes on to cite some stats from the Detroit Free Press. He says, I live near the site of the founding of the Republican Party. When I talk to Republicans in this area, they will admit that we got to do something, but Clark is the only one that they will admit that they would cross over and vote for. You can't win this election without the crossover vote, and Dean isn't going to get it, Raymond writes. The best he'll get, unless things get much worse, is that some of the Republicans will stay home. Raymond closes by saying, Wesley Clark is the best chance we have to win the next election. He will be a great president for all the people in this country and for peace and equity in the world. So let's not focus on distractions like what Gore said. Let's get to work to make the change we know is needed. Let's focus on getting Clark elected. That's Raymond in Cement City, Michigan. I don't have an agree with you, Raymond, but I understand your point of view. I'd like to get your opinion, you folks' opinion. 800-TALK-YES, all right? Help me out here. Gore endorses Howard Dean. What does this mean? Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
This is an issue that speaks to morality and science and the juxtaposition of the both.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine, and I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
If you've got a clogged up nose, Simply Stuffy. If you've got a snuffly nose, Simply Stuffy. If the rest of you feels fine, but your nose is out of line, give your schnozzle what it needs, Simply Stuffy.
Simply Stuffy, from the makers of Children's Tylenol. It has only the medicine your child needs to make a stuffy nose simply disappear.
If you want to smell a rose, get the stuff out of your nose. If you're sick of feeling snotty, Simply Stuffy.
Simply Stuffy. Use as directed.
If you think people are more important than corporations, you need to see The Progressive Populist. Twice a month, we feature columnists such as Jim Hightower, Molly Ivins, and other plutocrat pluckers from around the country. We'll send you a free sample copy if you'll call us toll-free 1-800-205-7067 or see our website at populist.com. That's 1-800-205-7067 or populist.com for The Progressive Populist, the newspaper for Main Street USA.
Animal Talk. Not your father's radio show about animals.
Welcome to Lifestyles of the Wet and Stinky. We're looking at fishy fat cats and wealthy crustaceans. This is Bloodsucking Leech here, sending you algae-covered wishes and caviar-laying dreams.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
Show.
Apparently, Simple Scotty missed the memo from Bush stating that everybody had to stop trying to link Saddam to 911.
The most dangerous threat we face in a post-September 11th world is the nexus between outlaw regimes with weapons of mass destruction and terrorists. Saddam Hussein had a history of weapons of mass destruction.
Maybe before you were born, you little jackass! Did Scotty not get the memo? There is no connection between 9/11 and Saddam. It came out of the Bush bastard's own mouth. It's come out of all their mouths. Condi Rice, Dick Cheney, Colin Powell, all of them. Scotty, hello.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
It's not your father's talk radio. It's Mike Malloy.
24 past the hour. Short program tonight.
We're only going to be here the balance of this hour, and then Congressman Dennis Kucinich joins us next hour, and we'll chat for a while, and then phone calls, and we're out of here. A two-hour program tonight. So if you want to get it said tonight, do call us now at 800-TALK-YES. Dave is calling from Royal Oak, Michigan. Hey, Dave. Yo, Dave. All right, let me put Dave on hold. We'll try to come back, pick up the call. Gary is calling from Middletown, Connecticut. Hey, Gary.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Doing fine, sir. How are you?
I hope you're feeling well. I had what you had like a month ago.
Yeah, nasty. God, I hate colds. Anyway.
Hey, I'm not a real, I'm a loyal Democrat. Mm-hmm. Always have been. Mm-hmm. And actually, I'm probably one of the few who liked Al Gore 4 years ago. But I really believe his endorsement, yesterday, I really, you know, get the sense it's a heartfelt, sincere that he really likes the guy and he really wants him to win. I just, honestly, I'm a Kucinich fan myself.
Right.
I would love it if he would head the Department of Labor in the Dean administration. But if you ask me my opinion of about what Gore said, I believe him. I think he's really sincere that he likes the guy.
Well, this raises raises some interesting questions. I had a lot of time laying on my butt in bed today watching all this stuff on television, and I heard practically the full announcement by Al Gore when he endorsed Dean, and one of the things Al Gore said was, we need to remake the Democratic Party. We need to remake America. And, when I heard that, I thought, well, there you go. Remake it from what? The party has been made into what it is by Al Gore, Al Fromm, Bill Clinton, Sam Nunn, Terry McAuliffe, the Democratic Leadership Conference. So
hey, you're talking to a guy who's in Joe Lieberman country, okay? You know, you look into look under Republican light, and there's his picture.
So what is Al Gore saying? Has Al Gore had an awakening?
I don't know. I think so. I don't know. I mean, I really, it sounds preposterous. I admit it. Like I said, I have nothing to prove or anything, but I get that impression. I don't know. I don't think he's running for anything. I think it's just what he thinks.
Yeah, well, what was interesting then later on today on CNN Crossfire, they had Terry McAuliffe on, I've had him on this program a couple of times, and he frustrates the hell out of me. But there sat Terry McAuliffe, who I'm sure was absolutely shocked and more or less said he was shocked. Al Gore didn't check with anybody at the DNC. Al Gore didn't check with Lieberman, didn't check with anybody when he made this this announcement. So he was questioned by Begala and the guy in the bow tie about what does this mean? When Al Gore says we need to remake the Democratic Party, Jesus, I mean, that's a direct slap at not just Terry McAuliffe, but especially Bill Clinton.
Yeah. Well, maybe there's a lot of pent-up anger about being saddled with Bill Clinton after the last election. I don't know.
Well,
I don't have much more to add except I didn't watch. I don't have cable and I don't have a internet, but I just have a gut feeling that I think the guy is like
really means it.
He's puking his guts out and he really means it.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for checking in, Gary. I hope you call again. This is your first time calling, right?
Yeah.
Well, I hope you,
probably the last. I'm too nervous to call again.
Oh, that's all right. Well, that's okay. Listen, thanks for checking in, pal.
Okay, Mike.
I appreciate it. That's the part that is intriguing to me. I have nothing. I have no problem with conversions on the road to Damascus. I mean, if Al Gore has decided that it's time to remake the Democratic Party. But what does he mean by that? Does that mean wrest it away from corporate control, which I think is what Howard Dean is all about? We talked about this last night. I don't know that Howard Dean is not a liberal, so I don't know what Al Gore means. Maybe you all have an opinion on this. Call us 800-TALK-YES.
thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better. He's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show, 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time, Monday through Friday on IE America Radio Network.
Some introductions can lead to trouble, especially when the newcomers wipe out the natives. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. You might not have heard of the small Indian mongoose, the cane toad, or the Brazilian pepper, but these species have caused the extinctions of many others. Daniel Simberloff is a biologist at the University of Tennessee. He says introduced plants and animals, those brought to new places by people, are one of the greatest threats to endangered species, second only to habitat loss. Simberloff says non-native plants and animals can do extreme damage after their introduction into a new environment. A prime example is the small Indian mongoose, brought to a number of islands, including Hawaii, to control rats in sugarcane fields.
It's not done a very good job of controlling rats, but it's attacked many birds, mammals, and reptiles, and some amphibians, and it's actually caused the global extinction of at least 30 species and subspecies of vertebrates in various places.
Simberloff says the U.S. Endangered Species Act is the best law in the world to provide for the rehabilitation of threatened plants and animals, but he says it does not keep potentially harmful species from being introduced in the first place.
The Endangered Species Act has been used in rehabilitation plans to have a component of the plan be to attempt to eradicate or at least lessen the populations of some introduced species that's causing the problem. But it's not been used to keep out species.
Simberloff says the federal government needs to tighten its regulation of imported plants and animals to protect native species. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 48.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday for Animal Celebrity Boxing.
Boxing kicks butt.
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
Yeah, what a cat.
And that dog on ice, Tanya Harding.
Yeah, that dog will fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network.
Sunday.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with an important public service announcement about sleep deprivation. Many of you are not obtaining the 10 hours of nightly sleep necessary for true patriotic Americans like my husband Georgie because you're staying awake to listen to the Mike Malloy Show from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time. This dangerous behavior puts you at risk of daytime blackouts, diminished worker productivity, ghastly hallucinations, and erectile dysfunction. So when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Standing up to the flying monkey right, it's more of Mike Malloy.
27 before the hour. Short program tonight. We'll be on the air for another hour and a half. In the hour coming up, Dennis Kucinich will join us from University of New Hampshire, where he participated in another one of the Democratic Party candidates' debates this evening. What we're talking about here is Al Gore's endorsement yesterday, and it was all over media today, his endorsement of Howard Dean. In endorsing Dean, Al Gore said, "We need to remake the Democratic Party." He also said, "We need to remake America," but the first part of that statement is the one that's most intriguing, I believe, because the Democratic Party has been made by people like Al Gore. What it is today. So what is he saying? Now, again, Howard Dean is not Dennis Kucinich. Howard Dean is not a liberal, and I don't think he's ever claimed. This is what the Republicans have tried to tack on him. They've tried to compare him to McGovern, which is just a screaming, knee-slapping, teeth-jarring joke It's just insane. But the Republicans know that we Americans are very stupid, and they use that stupidity against us. They are very stupid, too, but they use our inherent stupidity about political candidates against us. Who's going to go back and see what George McGovern was all about in 1972? Actually, nobody. All that most people know is, oh, yeah, Dick Nixon just beat his ass. But to compare Howard Dean to McGovern is comparing Nixon to George Washington or something. I don't know. It makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. But when Al Gore says we need to remake the Democratic Party, what is he saying? If you really need to remake the Democratic Party, don't you then endorse Dennis Kucinich? Seriously, I will probably end up supporting Howard Dean. If Kucinich does not get the nomination, then I will support Howard Dean. But is it not irrational for Al Gore to say we need to remake the Democratic Party and then endorse Howard Dean? Isn't Howard Dean kind of what the Democratic Party has become? And that's no slam against him. I don't mean he's a Terry McAuliffe Democrat at all. I don't mean he's a Bill Clinton. He's not even an Al Gore Democrat. But Howard Dean is the one thing that stands out, that truly stands out, I believe, in his candidacy is the fact that he is not a corporate Democrat. Now, that may be what Al Gore means. I find that enough to attract me to Howard Dean. Forget his position on the death penalty and NAFTA and Iraq and gun control and all this other stuff, which are decidedly conservative opinions. Forget all that. The mere fact that Howard Dean is turning out to be a people's candidate. If this is what the American people want, if this is what we want, and we are expressing that through our contributions, our $10, $20, $100, and $2,000 contributions, if we are expressing this by bypassing the corporate BS that has ruined the political system in this country, then count me in, dude. I'm right there with you. But Howard Dean is not a liberal. So if I'm not sure, and maybe you have the answer. What does Al Gore mean when he says we need to remake the Democratic Party, and Howard Dean is a man to lead us to that? Is Al Gore casting aside the Democratic Party that he built? You understand what I'm saying here, right? Of course you do. All right, I think Dave is back. Dave in Royal Oak. Dave?
Hi, Mike.
Hey, Dave.
I don't have the answer.
Well, all right.
Sorry, I had the flu,
and
I'm a heating and cooling guy, and people went without heat over the holidays because I don't work when I'm sick.
I don't blame you.
I give you and Kathy a lot of credit.
Well, we're only working 2 hours tonight, and we're going home.
Yeah, but you're still here. None of your loyal listeners would begrudge you if you took a day off for the flu.
Yeah, well, we don't have that. We've got bad viral colds.
Yeah, virus, cold, right. You're sick, bottom line.
Right. We may not come in tomorrow night, but I wanted to come in tonight because we had no way of getting in touch with the Kucinich campaign.
And sure.
We had booked Dennis for tonight, and we just had to be here. So.
Ooh, good transition. Okay, if I were to ask Kucinich a question, if he were president, what would he do about what would he do about the fact that we may be running low on natural gas in this country?
I think Kucinich is all for developing alternative forms of energy, hydrogen energy, biomass, solar, wind energy, thermal, geothermal energy. Dennis Kucinich, and I think Howard Dean does too, but I think Dennis Kucinich recognizes that this term peak oil is here. We have reached the point where we can now see the bottom of the barrel, so to speak, where it concerns oil and natural gas. And that bottom is going to be struck within the next couple, 3 decades. And we simply must, if the human race is to continue, we must get rid of thugs and monsters and ghouls like the Bush crime family and get some people leaving this country who understand alternative forms of energy.
Being in heating and cooling, I see a lot of gas lines.
Mm-hmm.
And it amazes me, even with new construction, how dependent we are on it.
Yeah,
I think it would be let's say we started admitting now, let's say Kucinich would become president and we would have an open energy policy discussion,
uh-huh.
And we admitted now that, you know, we're using more and more and we've already reached peak oil, according to Mike Rupert in the wilderness.com or from the wilderness.com.
And other sources.
And we see a rising cost in natural gas prices.
Right.
We are very dependent, especially up here in Michigan,
right,
but all over. I think it would be a major and difficult retrofitting process, a transition to convert to whatever, electric, even if we converted back to oil, which would be a shame because it's real dirty and it pollutes like heck. I'm sure the Bush family would love it.
You mean back to coal?
Well, no, there are oil burning systems.
Oh, okay.
You can actually burn oil.
Well, this is where I think technology and science and ingenuity would come into play, because I'll tell you what, if we are told that unless, and I think some scientists are starting to say this, unless we find alternative forms of energy, literally, we're doomed. Civilization stops. If civilization runs on gas, natural gas, and oil, and coal, in other words, fossil fuels, if that's where we're running, and we are, if that's how this engine runs, and there's going to be no more fuel to run the engine in a set amount of time, then we are looking at the extinction of the human race.
Well,
so
yeah, look around you.
Well, that's going to bring into play what Oliver's trying to say. That's going to bring into play the best minds, the best brains, and we will develop alternative fuel sources.
Yeah, but if you look around you, everything from the paint on the wall,
right,
which is a plastic base, it took energy to make that. The,
sure.
The drywall, the bricks, the
right,
roads, the cars, metal, the furnaces, all of this was fossil fuel expenditures. It's almost like an illusion we've built up that we can continue this incredibly energy-intensive society we have as we continue to build, measure everything positive in the national media in terms of progress by building more and consumer spending and more housing starts. All goes back to this head-in-the-sand, almost this blindness to the fact that we are, everything we do is a huge expenditure. It's like a battery, and we are draining it, fossil fuel battery.
Yeah, well, I completely agree with you. I'll tell you what I'll try to do, Dave, is bring that question up with Representative Kucinich when I have him on tonight. Listen, let me move on. We got some people here holding on, and I want to get to them before the top of the hour. Thanks, Dave. I appreciate you checking in. Luke is calling from Knoxville, Tennessee. Luke, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
Hey, I think the two things that I think kind of fueled this more than anything else were, first was the 2002 election, which I think Al Gore saw and said, you know, this DLC system just ain't working trying to play Bush light. Because I think he saw the way they just got drubbed in 2002.
Uh-huh.
And he said, this isn't working. And then I think the biggest thing which I think pushes this is the emergence of MoveOn.org.
Right.
I think that's bringing him back to something he was in favor of years ago. More of the people getting more involved in it over the internet,
uh-huh,
which I think helps. And you were talking this morning. You said you got to sit back and watch all the nice CNN coverage and all that.
Right.
Is it my opinion that for some reason Jeff Greenfield seems to think he's psychic?
Well,
I sat there watching. I watched it for about an hour this morning before the announcement came on, and he was sitting there saying, this is what he's thinking.
Uh-huh.
I'm sitting there going, how the heck do you know what he's thinking?
I know. Some of the political pundits on television crack me up. They have all the answers, and they're just amazing.
Well, these are the same people who, when Al Gore spoke in 2000, it's like, well, we don't want to use your words. We'll put words in your mouth, and this is what he was actually thinking.
Right, exactly.
And, I mean, it's just amazing.
I know.
I mean, some of this stuff, you know, it's like, say, I think it was probably a little bit early, but that was his decision. End of the week, we're getting Wesley Clark in here,
mm-hmm,
in to speak, so I'm going to go listen to him.
Right.
But, you know, it's just one of them things. It's like, I honestly just think I think more than anything else, I think it's part of the Move On group that I think that kind of spurred
all right, let me ask you one quick question.
Sure.
Before I move on here. Does this endorsement by Al Gore of Howard Dean matter to you?
Not really. I mean, I'll be honest. Right now, I'm probably between Dean and Clark,
mm-hmm,
as my choices. Like you, I wish Kucinich would be up there, but it's just not going to happen. I'm sorry to say it's not. But it's one of those things right now, that's probably who it's between. And
so,
I think he had to have it, though, because I think that helps him a little bit more in the South and more with the African-American part of the Democratic Party.
Well, I think that's true, too. It was no accident that this announcement was made in Harlem, right down the street from Bill Clinton's office.
Oh, yeah.
And there's no such thing as, not really, as the black vote any more than there is the white vote. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, there is, and I heard a couple of black leaders say this, a lot of folks in the so-called black community are not real clear on Howard Dean. Howard Dean is somebody who has come out of
far northeast.
Yeah, he comes out of left field, not politically speaking, yeah. But the endorsement of Al Gore of Howard Dean, I think a lot of folks will see that as a permission to go ahead and check out Howard Dean, if not back him altogether.
Well, it gives them a reason to say, I can take a second look at him.
Right.
You know, I can go back now, you know. He made his verbal strip, and that's okay. It's out of the way. Now we can go back and listen to hear what he actually says, other than just looking at the headline.
I think so.
See what his actual whole statement is.
Yeah. Luke, thanks.
All right,
sir. Appreciate your call. I think it also gives a lot of white people permission to take another look at Howard Dean or to actually support Howard Dean, especially white Southerners. Al Gore is a white Southerner. Al Gore understands the South. He's a product of the South. He's what he is. And regardless of what you hear, the South is not a monolithic Republican juggernaut that George Bush has in his hip pocket. So my opinion, and that's all it is, that Al Gore's endorsement in Harlem of Howard Dean kind of opens the door for black folk to take a closer look at him. It also, not the Harlem part, but the endorsement part, I think also opens the door for white Southerners, especially, to take another look at Howard Dean. But why Al Gore would do this, maybe Luke is right. Al Gore saw what happened in 2002, a lot of which was his fault. There was not an invisible hand messing with that election other than... what's her name? The Secretary of State in Florida, Catherine Harris. But by then, everything was screwed up so badly, thanks to the piss poor campaign that Al Gore ran, that some witch like Catherine Harris could step in and screw things up. So I you know, when Al Gore talks about the Democratic Party has to reassemble itself, it's just intriguing to me. I never would have expected that kind of remark. The endorsement was surprising to me. But to say what he said in making the endorsement, that was the part that I thought was like, whoa, what is this? Tim's calling from Chicago. Hey, Tim.
Good evening.
Hey.
Fellow cold sufferer.
Yeah, right. This is a lot of fun, isn't it?
November in the north, or December in the north. So.
Yeah, it's December in the south too, pal.
Yeah. Okay. To express my biases here, first of all, let me say I'm a Dean supporter,
mm-hmm.
and a Dean small dollar donor. There's a few of those.
Right.
And a Dean volunteer. I was in Iowa this past weekend.
Mm-hmm.
So I like the guy.
What does Al Gore's endorsement then mean to you?
I think, like many events in the campaign, it's new and exciting, and it always surprises you.
But does this in any way corrupt Dean's message? You know, Dean has been I think you and I can agree he's not a Kucinich style liberal. Dean is what Dean is.
No, he's a mainstream Democrat.
Right. So up to this point. One of the defining aspects of Howard Dean is he's been a non-corporate Democrat.
Right.
Al Gore is a corporate Democrat. Has Al Gore had a change and decided, like Luke suggested, that after having his rear end handed to him in the election in 2000, forget the Florida thing, it shouldn't have been that close to begin with, but
right.
after having his butt handed to him in the 2000 election, has Al Gore realized the Democratic Party has become too corporatized? I'm not saying Al Gore is ready to sit down with Howard Dean and they both become Dennis Kucinich liberals. That's not going to happen. But do you think it's because Al Gore sees too much corporate influence in the Democratic Party?
I don't think Al Gore is a corporate Democrat anymore.
You don't?
I think what happened is, and if you look at Al Gore's evolution, I think you see a thoughtful guy that at certain times in his career, he's paused, taken stock of his his position and reflected on where things are going and has changed his views and then started expressing them. Mm-hmm. So I think he did that with Earth and the Balance and the environment.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he started that way, certainly, and he adopted that as an issue and became very fervent about it, and he saw the future, which you've already been talking about with the oil.
Yeah, well, those are good.
I mean, I remember him in university when I was in college.
Tim, let me put you on hold. We got a break here. I'll come back and we'll finish up this conversation very quickly after this break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Be my man. Are you strong enough to be my man? Are you strong enough?
Oh, hon, this cold.
Here, take NyQuil. Ugh. You'll sleep like a...
Okay, up there.
You'll sleep like
need
a...
Need more tissues?
Sleep like a...
Cover your mouth.
Like you did before your mother moved in.
Oh, so you'll wear that red 90?
I heard that.
Give me that.
NyQuil, the nighttime sniffling, sneezing, coughing, aching, stuffy head, fever, best sleep you ever got with a cold medicine. Use as directed. Now try new and improved liquid caps.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights? Priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
This report is sponsored by Pfizer and Viagra Sildenafil Citrate. You've seen the signs as they leave the doctor's office. The spring in the step, the look of relief, spontaneous whistling. The technical term for this condition is, what took so long-itis? In layman's terms, it's what happens when you finally ask your doctor about Viagra. To experience the skipping, whistling, and sense of relief, ask your doctor about Viagra, and if a free sample is right for you. To learn more, go to Viagra.com.
Look, anything related to my physical well-being, I get a second opinion, and that includes the laxative I use. So when I asked my doctor which one he recommended, he didn't hesitate. Colace Stool Softener Capsules. Then I asked my neighborhood pharmacist. She said the same thing, Colace capsules. Now that's two people who I believe know what they're talking about, recommending one laxative, Colace capsules.
For more information on the number one stool softener brand recommended by doctors and pharmacists, go to ColaceCapsules.com.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says, if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights? Priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
You've got your green alligators and long-necked geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
Yeah.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy citizens to tune into the Mike Malloy Show weeknights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. I suggest that you recovering Malloy listeners spend these 3 hours simply standing in your yards, saluting the flags on your houses, apartments, or trailers, or whatever you little people live in. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
You've got your green alligators and long-necked geese, humpty-back camels and some chimpanzees, some cats and rats and elephants, but sure as you're born, don't you forget that unicorn.
Sunday nights, please, please listen to our show, because if you don't, Mark will not stop singing. Animal Talk, Sunday nights, on the IE America Radio Network.
You're listening to Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
It's about 5 before the hour. After the break, at the top of the hour, we'll be joined, scheduled to be joined by Dennis Kucinich, who was at the University of North New Hampshire this evening, Durham, New Hampshire, for the debate. Right now we're talking with Tim in Chicago. Where were we, Tim?
Well, I think talking about Gore and, you know, I just see him being a very forward-thinking individual after moments of reflection in his career. I think.
Well, listen to this. Diana emailed this, and Mike, I wonder, could Al Gore's comment that the Democratic Party needs to remake itself be a reaction to the party's lack of support for him and the debacle of the 2000 election? The reason he rolled over and conceded without much of a fight is probably that the party told him they wouldn't support a real fight for his win. Given what wimps the Democrats have been in the years since the election, their cowardice over the election is no surprise. In other words, Gore may blame the party for his not being president. I'd certainly hold a grudge over that one, Diana writes, and what better revenge than to champion an outsider for president?
Yep.
That's from Diana in Florida. Do you think maybe she's onto something?
I think she's onto something. I mean, when do we ever have a nominee that actually is an insurgent front runner?
Very seldom.
Very seldom. I mean, the last one was probably Ronald Reagan.
How about Clinton?
Clinton certainly wasn't.
Wasn't he an outsider? Nobody wanted to take on Pappy Bush, remember? Do you remember back in 90 and 91, right after the war, the first war, and Pappy Bush had a 91% rating or 92%?
Well, that's true that nobody at the top tier wanted to run. However, among the folks who ran, Clinton was the very much the glad-handing, large-dollar fundraiser sort of candidate.
Yeah, he was that. He was also the smartest.
And he was brilliant.
Right, politically brilliant and intellectually smart. Bill Clinton is a very smart man.
Absolutely.
No doubt about it.
I think Al Gore's a smart guy.
I think so, too. But maybe Al Gore has looked into the future, and all he sees is Republican administrations, as far as the eye can see, unless the Democratic Party does something to break away from whatever it is that has put the curse on him.
Well, how do you win an election? You have core values well articulated, and you have the ability to communicate that, and Dean's trying to build that through Internet and other mechanisms to do an end run around this lousy media we've got.
Boy, is that the truth. Tim, thanks for checking in, pal.
You bet. Good night.
All right, sir. You have a nice evening. All right, we're going to break here, and hopefully, when we come back, we'll be joined by Ohio Congressman Dennis Kucinich. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Listening to Mike Malloy on the IE America Radio Network, copyright 2003.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. Some of our weaker citizens suffer an addiction to talk radio that causes them to listen to that Mike Malloy person each night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time. We suggest you satisfy your Jones by listening to some of our morally upstanding, honest, and ethical talk show hosts like Dr. Laura, G. Gordon Liddy, Oliver North, and Rush Limbaugh. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
Mike Malloy is rational, and you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you
it's
hate
not
me?
True.
You
why,
hate
why
me?
Put something on that says he's a great goof, liberal.
Goof.
You know, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
The IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
A car bomb attack in a barracks near the northern city of Mosul early Tuesday wounded 31 American soldiers, mainly with flying debris, the military said. The injuries were not life-threatening. The attack occurred when a car drove to the gate of the base of the 3rd Brigade of the 101st Airborne Division in the town of Talifar, 30 miles west of Mosul, spokesman Major Trey Kate said. Guards opened fire on the vehicle and it blew up. A total of 31 soldiers were wounded, mostly by debris and flying glass. None of the injuries were life-threatening, Kate said. Republican Bill Janklow, a dominating figure in South Dakota politics for nearly 30 years, was convicted of manslaughter Monday for speeding through a stop sign at a rural intersection and colliding with a motorcyclist. Janklow quickly announced he will resign from Congress on January 20th, the same date he is scheduled to be sentenced. He could get up to 10 years in prison. Jurors in the congressman's boyhood hometown convicted Janklow of second-degree manslaughter, reckless driving, running a stop sign, and speeding for the August 16th crash. They killed Randy Scott, 55, a farmer from Hardwick, Minnesota. Prosecutors said Janklow was traveling more than 70 miles per hour in a white Cadillac when he crashed with Scott's Harley-Davidson. Former Vice President Al Gore is endorsing Howard Dean for the Democratic presidential nomination, adding momentum and political prestige to Dean's front-running campaign. 5 weeks before Iowa's kickoff caucuses, Gore is appearing with his former party rival in New York City's Harlem neighborhood before flying with Dean to Cedar Rapids, Iowa for a formal endorsement, several Democratic officials said Monday on a condition of anonymity. Dean will then fly to New Hampshire in time for the final Democratic debate of the year. Rocker Ozzy Osbourne underwent emergency surgery at a hospital in Britain after suffering serious injuries in an all-terrain vehicle crash on the grounds of his estate in Buckinghamshire, his publicist said on Monday. During examination, doctors found that Ozzy had broken his collarbone, 6 ribs, and a vertebrae in his neck, according to his publicist. The injuries are not considered life-threatening. The 55-year-old rocker was injured while riding the all-terrain vehicle during a day off from promoting his new single. More news after this.
Military veterans deserve better. They must wait endlessly for basic health care from the Department of Veterans Affairs. If you or a military veteran you know is one of the many heroes waiting for VA health care, the American Legion wants to tell your story to your elected officials in Washington, D.C.
About 50 prostitutes marched to Parliament Monday to protest a government decision to withdraw legislation that would have made it easier for brothels to operate in Athens during the 2004 Olympics. Prostitution is legal and highly regulated. Prostitutes accuse the government of trying to enforce the legislation to clean up the capital ahead of the Olympic next summer. Closing legal brothels, prostitutes have said, would feed the illegal sex trade before the Olympics.
For IE America Network News, this is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
You don't want to miss the first pitch of the playoffs for the second year in a row, so you're probably scrambling for dinner. Hey, think fast. Think eggs, like an omelet with mushrooms, cheese, and tomatoes, or anything else you like. Omelets are delicious, easy to make, and ready in minutes, so you get to the game on time, see the first pitch, your team sweeps the playoffs, and goes on to win the championship. All thanks to the incredible edible egg. Think fast. Think eggs. For other quick dinner ideas, visit AEB.org, the American Egg Board.
Dick Cheney, Rummy Rumsfeld, Colin Powell, and Condi Rice aren't the only fierce hawks in George W.'s warmongering government, and the Pentagon is not the only federal force that Bush has unleashed to attack a foreign foe in the name of defending the homeland. Here's the name of another hawkish generalissimo, Mark B. McClellan. Who? Okay, Mark's a dimmer light in George's galaxy of self-styled tough guys and gals, but he's no less committed to Bushko's agenda of global empire, in which all other countries are expected to do our bidding, or else. McClellan is Bush's commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration, and to protect you and me, he says, he has launched his own war against a rogue nation that he says threatens the very safety of the American people, Canada. Canada? A people so gentle that their national flag features a maple leaf? What threat are they? Well, huffs Generalissimo McClellan, Canadian pharmacies sell prescription drugs at prices 30 to 50% cheaper than what drug makers sock us with here in America. So? Well, he says, online businesses in our country are allowing America's consumers to buy their medicines through Canada rather than paying the rip-off prices charged here in the homeland. So? Well, he sputters, the drug industry does not like this, so it must be stopped. Thus we have the remarkable sight of our FDA commissioner attacking Canada so the drug giants can keep overcharging Americans. Of course, McClellan claims that is for our own good because, he says, those dastardly Canadians might be shipping unsafe drugs to us. In retort, the Canadians note that practically all of the medicines they ship are made by American companies under the FDA's own supervision, and that Canada has excellent drug safety laws. This is Jim Hightower saying, Mark's not defending us, he's protecting the drug price gougers, who happen to be one of Bush's top campaign contributors.
Get things in my mind, and I say, let's try this.
Here's Nancy in the background. Nancy.
Oh,
hey, Nancy.
Am I on the air?
Oh. Hello.
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 Sorry.
You're sorry you're on the air?
I'm glad I didn't say something I really shouldn't have said.
Really?
You should have heard what she was telling me a minute ago.
Wow.
Bite me, doughboy.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
I know you're out there somewhere. I know I'll find you somehow, and somehow I'll reach it.
Right here, right now, Mike Malloy.
The words that I remember. Welcome back, 7 past the hour. We're at 800 Talk Yes. Dennis Kucinich joins us now from New Hampshire, actually from Durham, New Hampshire. Is that right, Congressman? I think that's
right.
where you were tonight.
At the moment, I'm in Portsmouth, New Hampshire.
Portsmouth. Earlier this evening, Congressman Kucinich and the other eight presidential hopefuls for the Democratic Party met on the stage, University of New Hampshire, for debate. How goes it? Let's get an overview first, Congressman. Your campaign in general and the debate tonight.
Well, the campaign is organized in 50 states. We have a grassroots organization, and we're on the move. I mean, we're organizing. There's more and more activity on our website at Kucinich.us. And as people see what the campaign stands for and our vision of hope that my election will mean the end of fear and the beginning of hope in America, I think that, you know, we're resonating. And tonight, we had a good night tonight.
I think that came through in the comments that you made, especially the part about dropping, getting away from fear. I think that's a good message to get out to the American people, especially now. Let me ask you about the Progressive Tax Act of 2003 that you introduced in Congress, I believe, not more than a week ago. A bill that is to reform the tax system and provide needed relief to workers and families. Can you elaborate on that? Because I don't think the media gave it much coverage. I don't think, unless people go to your website, they understand what this Progressive Tax Act is all about.
Well, first of all, you know, you have to remember that the tax code is inherently unfair. I mean, you only need to look at the at what's happened with the with the Bush tax cut,
sure,
to know that the way that the distribution works, that the benefits today go mainly to people at the top.
Mm-hmm.
So the so what I've done is to introduce a tax bill that provides for those Americans who are in the middle to get a to essentially get an opportunity to. You know, they have a tax cut that would assist workers and families, and, mm-hmm. and this bill that I introduced reforms the tax system to provide needed relief to workers and families. If you look at the tax cuts that the presidents had in 2001, 2002, 2003, they've created a tax system that favors the wealthy over the working. Tax cuts have really complicated the tax code with more loopholes, and they've saddled the federal treasury with record deficits. So this bill that I have, Mike, creates a more... more fair, simple, and adequate tax system, and it gives $87 billion per year to people with modest income and families in the middle class, and the bill collects an additional $107 billion per year from the Bush tax cuts, closing corporate tax loopholes and other tax giveaways,
mm-hmm.
and the bill raises a sum total of $20 billion per year that remains available for deficit reduction or new spending.
What kind of response are you getting in the House having introduced this bill?
Well, I had a number of co-sponsors, but you know, let's face it, this you know, members and it's, when you're talking about a tax bill, members take a lot of time looking at it and.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but when they find out that the bill provides a refundable $1,530 payroll tax credit for people who work, you know, when they find out this tax credit is very simple and it's targeted to relieve a high tax burden,
mm-hmm.
and that, you know, we pointed out that that these are the kind of tax credits that can provide a stimulus effect, you know, while encouraging work.
Right.
And the other thing that we do, you know, in this bill that you might be interested in, Mike, it provides a refundable $2,000 simplified family tax credit, and it simplifies the tax code by consolidating the earned income tax credit and the child tax credit and an additional tax credit. And there's an exemption for children into one. It takes all of that and puts it into one simplified family credit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to provide for greater transparency, and there'll be extra work incentives, and it'll have a stimulus effect. So by looking at those tax credits and raising federal revenue by closing corporate loopholes and setting tougher penalties to prevent corporate tax abuse, you know, we have more money. And, you know, we're going to, and the bill, of course, has to roll back most of the Bush tax cuts in the past 3 years that have benefited mostly the people in the top bracket.
Sure, sure. Let me ask you this. In your travels around the country on this campaign, what's the number one concern from Americans that you are hearing? Is it the economy?
War.
Is it foreign policy?
It's the war.
Iraq?
Absolutely. I mean, people are upset about the fact that we still have troops there who are getting shot at every day, and the war looks like, you know, the president said May 1st the war's over, and all of a sudden, you know, since then we've had lost more troops.
Mm-hmm.
From that point on than we did before when there was an invasion. And American people are really concerned about, we seem to be getting in deeper and deeper. They keep reading these stories about the conflict intensifying, and you know, that's why tonight, Mike, what I did was to point out that we're not stuck there. That I put that plan on our website at Kucinich.us, and it is getting a lot of attention now because at this point, surprisingly, I'm alone among the candidates in offering a plan to get out of Iraq,
mm-hmm.
and while Al Sharpton probably would agree with me that we should get out, all the other candidates are talking about
right.
staying in. And you cannot take the position that you are opposed to the war and maintain that you support the occupation, because the occupation is a continuation of the war.
Mm-hmm. It does seem to take some of the candidates' positions, like Kerry, like Gephardt, like Howard Dean, and put them in a strange position of saying, well, you know, I'm against this, but we have to stay. We can't bug out. We can't allow for a defeat. I, with all due respect to our military, all due respect to that should be placed with our State Department. We've lost this war in Iraq. This war is a loser. I don't care how we come out of this. We have 448 Americans who are dead. God knows how many Iraqis are dead. We have lost this war. Well, and the part that concerns me, it's a question, partly, why are not all the Democratic contenders, yourself included, busting George Bush every chance you get? Maybe you are, and I'm just not hearing it, because media it does not treat you the way they treat some of these other candidates, but well, busting him every day.
I think that's going to change, though, after tonight, because what I did tonight was to establish very clearly the necessity of getting out, and also talked about the plan. And I think people are listening now. Tonight was, in a sense, I think tonight is the beginning of an abbreviated race. I think there are more Americans paying attention right now. And I think what's going to happen is when Americans look at that there's one candidate who really has a plan and talking about getting this country out of Iraq and showing how it can be done. See, the problem is, Mike, look, you just talked about, you know, it's close to 450 soldiers who have been lost already.
Right.
Well, let's start to extrapolate this. If we've been there since, and that's just since May, you know,
That's total.
That's total.
Right. That's total. Right.
So if you, you know, if you the invasion started on the 17th of February, I believe, somewhere around there.
I think so.
So if you start to extrapolate those losses, you're looking at, if we stay there a few years, as most of the candidates now seem willing to concede, you're looking at losses that will go into the thousands.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
And if it's $155 billion that we've spent in the first year, that money is that's going to go into, you know, we're looking at a half a trillion if we just stay there a few years. And,
right.
And the point that I made tonight in the debate was that you have to make the connection between the entire domestic agenda getting sunk, going down, and we start to put the money into war.
Mm-hmm.
This is what Martin Luther King talked about when he gave a speech at Riverside Church in the mid-'67 or 68, where he talked about the hopes of two nations were being destroyed by the war. And so this war is not over, and the talk of the occupation and staying there is chilling to me. When I'm standing up there on stage, Al Sharpton made the point, you know, when he compared it to, you know, if you break in and the person's stays, you know, you can't say that the break-in's ended.
Right.
And so I am, Mike, going to drive this issue home from now, you know, throughout the primaries until either all the candidates join me or until the American people will understand that there's one candidate who is absolutely insistent on the United States rejoining the world community by coming up with a plan where we get our troops out of there. And, you know, again, I really feel so strongly about this.
I know you do, and so do a lot of Democrats. So do I certainly do. Let me ask you, though, is there a downside to taking that position? In other words, the way the Republicans frame this is that we can't turn tail and run. Even though they got us into this, we can't suffer defeat. And I hear Democratic candidates saying this.
Right. You know what? That is exactly. As a matter of fact, there's one of our Democratic candidates actually authored a report that said just that.
Right.
And so let's look at this for a minute. We need to review some recent history. Why are we in Iraq? We're in there because the American people.
We're lied to. Yeah, absolutely.
There was no connection between Iraq and 9/11, and you know, Al-Qaeda's
right.
role in 9/11,
right.
And Iraq, the anthrax attack. The Iraq did not have weapons of mass destruction, as we know, and they had no intention or ability to attack the United States, and they weren't trying to get uranium from Niger.
Right.
And so, why did we go there? And so, if it was wrong to go in, it's wrong to stay in. And what people need to understand in watching this, the way that this campaign in Iraq is being run now is the fight is intensifying and the insurgency is becoming even more powerful. And, you know, we're now flattening houses. We're dropping 500-pound bombs on people's homes in order to get at a single sniper.
Right.
And it's being justified. And there is a an illogic, and not only that, I didn't get a chance to actually quote from it tonight. But if you read the Sunday New York Times, you'll see a story about how the U.S. tactics are changing.
Yes, I saw that.
Did you see that?
Yes.
Where some of the commanders are commenting on...
It sounds like Vietnam all over again. Well, we have to destroy the village to save
We have
to kill these people in order for them to understand that we're here to bring them freedom.
That's
insane.
You have characterized one of the quotes, and one of the other quotes is that you have to understand, you know, paraphrase from the Times article. You have to understand the Arab mind. You know, all they understand is fear and violence. Like, what's that about?
It's incredible. It's
scapegoating, the characterization that's being made. It's chilling, and this is our country. This is my beloved America that is proceeding in a way that it just doesn't even sound right, and so that's why I'm so insistent on getting out.
And it's come to the point now where it's an immoral position. Congressman, we have to break here for just a second. When we come back, we'll only have about 3 or 4 minutes, but I want to ask you about energy policy, what Kucinich administration would do where it concerns energy policy, okay? Right. All right, we'll be right back in just a second. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly Magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says, if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
There are over 200 laxatives on the market today, and the one doctors recommend most is Colace Stool Softener Laxatives. That's because over the years, doctors have learned stimulant-free Colace capsules provide comfortable relief their patients can rely on. If you suffer from occasional bouts of constipation, try Colace capsules. If you do, we're sure we'll receive another important endorsement. Yours. For more information on the number one stool softener brand recommended by doctors, go to ColaceCapsules.com.
If your hacking just won't stop, simply cough. If you're honking like a duck, simply cough. If the rest of you feel fine, but you're coughing all the time, and it's waking up your sister, simply cough.
Simply cough. From the makers of Children's Tylenol, it has only the medicine your child needs to make a cough simply disappear.
If your soda's all a tickle and you're really in a pickle, and you're hacking off a packing, simply cough.
Simply cough. Use as directed.
Hi, I'm Marianne Williams. I hope that you'll listen to me here at IE America Radio Network every Monday through Friday afternoon. I'm talking about how we can change the world from the inside out. How do the principles that apply to us spiritually and psychologically also apply to us collectively? How we act not only as individuals, but as a nation. Join me. Let's transform ourselves, and let's transform our world. And let's do it now.
The Marianne Williamson Show, Monday through Friday from 3 p.m. till 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the IE America Radio Network.
What does most political talk radio sound like?
Good morning and welcome to my show. I'm fine. Thanks for asking.
A little self-centered.
We're not going to take any calls right now because I want to talk. Remember, the show is at its best when it's more me and less of you.
Not very listener friendly.
We're talking about all the progress we've made in Iraq. Tom and Seattle, you're on the air. Make it quick.
Yeah, I don't really agree with what you said about...
And I don't agree with you calling my show. Let's get it clear, people. If you don't agree with me, then you must be a communist.
A little one-sided?
The fact is that the Dixie Chicks should be sent to Iraq to live in a Shave with Osama. Jeff in California, you're on the air. Make it quick.
I have a comment on how the U.S. has completely forgotten about Osama bin Laden.
No, you don't have a comment, Jeff. But what you do have is the privilege to listen to my show. And you're abusing it. And I am offended.
All around bad radio.
Says you.
But there is an alternative.
What?
You can get the best in progressive talk radio on the only progressive talk radio network there is, i.e. America Radio Network. For more information, go to iamericaradio.com.
You'll be back.
No, they won't.
Yes, they will.
Get out of here.
Don't touch me.
Hi, I'm Marianne Williams. I hope that you'll listen to me here at IE America Radio Network. Every Monday through Friday afternoon, I'm talking about how we can change the world from the inside out. How do the principles that apply to us spiritually and psychologically also apply to us collectively? How we act not only as individuals, but as a nation. Join me. Let's transform ourselves, and let's transform our world. And let's do it now.
The Marianne Williamson Show, Monday through Friday, from 3 p.m. till 5 p.m. Eastern Time, on the IE America Radio Network.
Join us again tomorrow.
Not that. No. We're still here.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous.
Yeah.
Here's Mike Malloy.
Okay. Thank you, Robin. We're talking with Ohio Congressman Dennis Kucinich, who is also a candidate for the Democratic nomination to be president of the United States. Energy policy, Congressman Kucinich, there have been reports circulating in such diverse places as Financial Times, a website run by Michael Rupert on the West Coast, about this term peak oil, that geologists now have realized we are reaching literally the bottom of the barrel where it concerns oil and natural gas. And as far as continuing to use coal, that seems to be what the Bush administration wants to do. But what about alternative energy sources? What is your plan?
To have a portfolio of renewable energy of 20% by the year 2010. Now, what that means is that by the year 2010, we must have started a major transition away from non-renewable energy sources of oil, nuclear, and coal, and towards renewable energy. Renewable energy meaning solar and wind and geothermal,
right,
and what they call green hydrogen, and to incentivize it with federal investment and to create new energy industries using the technology of the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, which has been wonderful for expanding America's horizons. You know, President Kennedy understood the technological genius of America in combining it with the heart of America, the soul of America, the spirit of America, with an uplifting and all-encompassing vision, and which he wrapped into a promise to put someone on the moon. And, you know, that vision started with him.
Mm-hmm.
And the time that Neil Armstrong actually stepped on the moon was a fulfillment of a promise that President Kennedy made that started with kind of the capstone on America's dream during the 60s,
right.
And I would say that for my presidency, it would be about energy sustainability, about renewable energy, about harnessing the wisdom and the vision of America and involving the whole country in this great cause to save our planet, to restructure the politics of this world by making, it's not just about energy independence, it's about interdependence, it's about sustainability, sustaining our nation and the planet, it's about finding new technologies where we can create a shift of resources in this country where people aren't spending so much money on energy. And it's about changing our politics, too.
Mm-hmm.
It inevitably, Mike, it's about peace and prosperity. And this is a time we can start. Americans are ready for it.
I would think. We have about a minute left, Congressman. What's your plan when you get up in the morning? Where are you off to tomorrow?
Well, I'm in New Hampshire for a couple of days. You know, we're going to be on the run. You know, I'm from 7:30 in the morning. I have appointments all the way through the end of the evening. I'm very excited to be here, and you know, this campaign's a 50-state campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And if people are interested in information, they can always go to the website at Kucinich.us. I would ask them, by the way, C-SPAN covered the Florida State Democratic Party Convention.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get a chance, Mike, I'd appreciate if you check it out on the C-SPAN website, because I was there not only to present a speech, but also later on they had a forum where Howard Dean and I had a chance to participate at the dinner that evening. And C-SPAN covered it. You might find it interesting.
Yeah, I'll definitely do that. You sound like you need some sleep, Congressman. Hang in there.
Yeah.
I hope you get the message out. I also hope we'll talk again before this thing hits the actual primaries and caucuses.
Thank you. Thank you for your show, which is so important to this country. And you do such a great public service, and it's an honor to be on. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you, Congressman. Dennis Kucinich, Congressman from Ohio. And Democratic presidential hopeful joined us from, where do you say it was, Kathy? And we're at New Hampshire? Portsmouth? Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Quick break. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
In high places. They've stolen our country and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better. He's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show, 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time, Monday through Friday on IE America Radio Network.
Some introductions can lead to trouble, especially when the newcomers wipe out the natives. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. You might not have heard of the small Indian mongoose, the cane toad, or the Brazilian pepper, but these species have caused the extinctions of many others. Daniel Simberloff is a biologist at the University of Tennessee. He says introduced plants and animals, those brought to new places by people, are one of the greatest threats to endangered species, second only to habitat loss. Simberloff says non-native plants and animals can do extreme damage after their introduction into a new environment. A prime example is the small Indian mongoose, brought to a number of islands, including Hawaii, to control rats in sugarcane fields.
It's not done a very good job of controlling rats, but it's attacked many birds, mammals, and reptiles, and some amphibians, and it's actually caused the global extinction of at least 30 species and subspecies of vertebrates in various places.
Simberloff says the U.S. Endangered Species Act is the best law in the world to provide for the rehabilitation of threatened plants and animals, but he says it does not keep potentially harmful species from being introduced in the first place.
The Endangered Species Act has been used in rehabilitation plans to have a component of the plan be to attempt to eradicate or at least lessen the populations of some introduced species that's causing the problem. But it's not been used to keep out species.
Simberloff says the federal government needs to tighten its regulation of imported plants and animals to protect native species. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Animal Talk, not your father's radio program, take 47.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday.
Yeah!
Animal Celebrity Boxing.
We're gonna kick some butt!
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
What a cat!
And that dog on ice, Tonya Harding.
Tonya Harding, she'll fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Boys, come on!
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Picklesbush. It seems some of you are still listening to that Mike Malloy person at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Many chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists when they feel the un-American urge to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. The pain is only temporary, but it is nothing compared to the everlasting furnaces of brimstone hell you will experience if you continue listening to the Mike Malloy Show. This is Laura Picklesbush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
justice, and the American way with Mike Malloy. Where else?
It's coming. 27 before the hour, and Kathy and I are bugging out in 27 minutes. We're at 800 Talk, yes. I guess the home office in Detroit is going to play an hour of what, Kathy? Tom Hartman, Tom Hartman show? Okay. So if you stay tuned, there will be an hour of the best of Tom Hartman in place of our third hour. I'm going to go home and have a hot toddy. Robert in New Orleans sent this in. Obviously, he emailed it before our conversation with Dennis Kucinich. Robert writes, Mike, the debate tonight was the sorriest excuse for a debate I think I have ever seen in my life. Ted Koppel insisted on asking questions about who was endorsing whom, where candidates' poll numbers were, and how much money people were raising. All of this time, Mike, I thought political debate should be about the issues, not about moderators trying to marginalize individual candidates. For what it is worth, Robert writes, Dennis Kucinich did get the loudest and longest applause tonight when he criticized Ted Koppel's questioning about polls and fundraising. Almost no time was spent inquiring about the particulars of the candidates' platforms. Of course, being the corporate media whore that Koppel is, he could never really ask about the particulars of the issues because that would favor Kucinich, and the corporate media whores would never allow Kucinich to express his views on air, lest his campaign takes off. However, at one point, Carol Moseley-Braun pointed out that the Iraqi invasion violated the U.S. Constitution's requirement that Congress declare war. Ted Koppel made fun of her position by saying to the effect, well, we haven't declared war in 60 years, why start now? Mike, when Dennis Kucinich comes on tonight, would you please ask him in reference to this war if it is okay to continue ignoring the U.S. Constitution? Just because we have developed the outrageous tradition of ignoring the fact that the U.S. Constitution requires Congress declare war. Robert in New Orleans. Well, I think we kind of got to that, Robert, in a roundabout way, but I saw the part you're talking about where Koppel's kind of snotty-ass remark. Ted Koppel either just thoroughly pisses me off or I really enjoy the way he... I haven't seen Nightline in a long time because of the hours that we work. But I used to go back and forth about Koppel. He's the greatest interviewer, takes no BS from anybody, really gets to the heart of it. And two nights later I can say, well, you media whore, you know, you're just as bad as somebody on Fox News Channel. So I float back and forth, or used to. We don't watch any of that anymore because we're working. But the bit I saw tonight on C-SPAN while we were waiting for the program to begin here left me kind of cold. The questions that were being asked were ludicrous. And I don't understand that. I do not understand that. It's easy for me or Robert or anybody to write these guys off as media whores, these anchor people and so on and so forth. It's very easy to do that. But it still raises the question, at least in my mind, why? Why do they do this? Why do they give a tinker's damn about who endorsed whom? Why do they care about how much money is being raised? Why don't they talk about the issues? It's infuriating. But for people like you and me, there's nothing we can do. Absolutely nothing that you and I can do about it. When we watch network television or cable television or any kind of television where these high-priced anchors, what am I saying, Kathy, reporters or media stars, where they're doing the questioning, you're not going to get anything. One of the people who's frustrating the hell out of me lately is Judy Woodruff on CNN. The snotty, smarmy, ridiculous questions that these people are asking. It's just... So, Robert, in New Orleans, I hope that answers your question. I forget what the question was. Leland is calling from Santa Fe. Hey, Leland.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
I was hoping I was going to get to ask the congressman a question about 911. That question being, how does he feel about the complicity possibility? I was responsible for getting Phil Berg and his team in Philadelphia to contact you and get on the show.
Oh, well, thank you. That's the attorney for the woman,
Ellen Mariani.
Mariani, who has filed a RICO lawsuit against Bush regarding 911, right?
That's correct. And I was also able, through a friend, to inquire of Dennis about his position on 911, and he claims that he hasn't seen any evidence and he doesn't feel that the proposition is likely. So I was hoping that we could talk to him about that tonight.
Mm-hmm. I think that would be an issue that no matter what Dennis Kucinich thinks in his or feels in his heart of hearts, that at this point in this campaign he would stay completely away from, and frankly, I don't blame him. If I were a candidate for president, even though I think Bush is a mass murderer, if somebody said to me, what's your position on
Maybe
Bush?
Maybe it's because Bush is a mass murderer.
Well, that could be, but if somebody asked me and I were a candidate for president, I would try to avoid answering that question. What I would do if I got elected and pulled a Democrats into the majority in the House and the Senate with me, then I would get the word to House leaders or somebody to begin an investigation of the entire Bush administration and try to put these, here comes a bad word, sons of bitches in prison, which is where they belong. So I can understand why Dennis would stay away from that question. It makes perfect political sense to me.
Yeah, I understand, and that's what everybody's been telling me, but I was still hoping that he might at least try to give some real answers as an elected representative as to what the various discrepancies do in fact mean.
Mm-hmm. I think in his capacity as a member of Congress, a member of the House, that he would probably be more willing to do that as Cynthia McKinney was until she was defeated than he would as a Democratic presidential candidate.
That's a good point.
You know?
That's
so.
A good point.
All right, Leland, thanks for checking in, pal.
No problem, Mike.
All right, sir. Appreciate your call. Spitfire is calling from Anaheim, California. Hey, Spitfire.
How you doing?
Doing fine, sir.
You sure?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. You feeling a little better?
No, I'll feel better in 20 minutes when I walk out of here and go home.
Ah.
Short program tonight.
You got my email, right?
I believe I did, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, well, it was about the burger, but, you know, also about the gift basket that I send you.
Okay.
Yeah, it was funny. I pulled it up on MSN Search.
Yeah.
The first thing that popped up, I just punched in Get Well Soon. The first thing that popped up was a Get Well Soon gift basket from Walmart.
Oh, no thanks.
So I promised not to send it to you since it was from Walmart.
Thank you very much.
Okay. I want to congratulate you. You got something that was more important than Gore endorsing Dean. Kucinich endorsed your show.
Yes, he did, didn't he? But of course, you know how politicians are. They all say the same thing.
Do you think he listens?
I don't know. No, that was very kind of him. Like I said early on, months ago, it seems like 1,000 years ago. Hey, Truth Seekers, Mike Malone. Not back Al Sharpton, but I could back Howard Dean and even Gephardt, even Kerry. Wesley Clark, too.
Yeah, the biggest problem I have with Howard Dean is that he has a history of going up against environmentalists when he was governor.
I understand that. But let me just put this out here. Here's my take on Howard Dean's candidacy. And I think this is true with a lot of issues. There is a collective wisdom that does reside in the electorate, in Democrats. I honestly and deeply believe this. There's a collective wisdom. If the collective wisdom is saying Howard Dean is the best candidate at this point, and that may not be my opinion, I will defer to the collective wisdom, because I think that the wisdom of thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people who are Democrats like I am, if their wisdom says, and they've been given the choice on this, the people have spoken, as far as I'm concerned, on Dean. Now, I think part of the reason is because he was the first one to effectively use the Internet. Whatever the reasons are, people have listened to his point of view. And he is the front runner, and I respect that. I will continue to back Kucinich because I'm just a Kucinich Democrat, and I just am.
Oh, yeah, same here. But given a choice, I mean, America is going to have a choice between a doofus and a doctor.
But I will go with Howard Dean, and not reluctantly. I will once my man is out of it, I will go vocally and proudly for Dean, because I understand that the collective wisdom amongst Democrats out there is far superior to my individual interpretation of these candidates. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think one of the biggest things that Kucinich has brought to the table throughout this campaign, irregardless, is the fact that he is, you know, there.
Yeah.
He's actually brought life back to the idea of liberalism within the Democratic Party.
Right.
Because after Clinton and, you know, it just seemed like, you know, the DLC and all that. It didn't seem like there were any real Democrats left. And then all of a sudden he comes up and he's been able to get his message out there enough to where people are looking at it from a different angle than just, you know, mm-hmm. we've got to toe the line and keep the, you know, status quo and all. But, I mean, you know, the kicking and screaming into the future that has had to happen in order to get Republicans to come along.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of those ones that does the most in the way of dragging them to the forefront, you know, mm-hmm. being the head of the Progressive Caucus. And the fact that he even went as a presidential candidate
mm-hmm.
Says a lot, because his message has been able to get out there to more people. But unfortunately, there's this media blackout on him.
Yeah.
People heard him and actually heard what he stood for,
right.
then they would probably back him. A lot of people who back Dean say, well, I'm a Kucinich man, but I know Howard Dean is electable,
mm-hmm.
which is like a surrender. You know, it's like, well, there's only one of them that's getting the media coverage. I don't know that much about Dean. I haven't really looked into Dean that much. I know where Kucinich stands.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's a real necessity for Kucinich backers to understand Howard Dean's candidacy. And that means going to deanforchange.com and reading his position papers and getting familiar with it, because there is a very good chance that Howard Dean will be the Democratic Party's nominee for president. And if that's the case, people like you and me are going to have to work toward his election, and that means we're going to have to understand
right.
what his positions are. So,
well, I think what we need to do is that we need to basically stop and realize that the candidate doesn't need to breathe fire. He just needs to feel the heat when we do.
Right.
In this current administration, they don't feel the heat at all.
I hear that.
They had all those protesters out there. They ignored it.
Yeah, I hear you.
You know, and I think Dean would feel the heat if he started getting it from the public.
Spitfire, thanks for checking in.
Sure.
All right, sir. Appreciate it. The other thing, too, as Spitfire's talking and even considering these various candidacies, I would hope that a Howard Dean presidency would include a position within that administration for Dennis Kucinich. I'm just laying the scenario out, a Howard Dean presidency, that it would include a very high-level position, a policy position, for Dennis Kucinich. He speaks from a position of moral authority, I believe, in terms of the Democratic Party's platform and planks within that platform that go back 50 years. Kucinich is, I don't want to call him an FDR Democrat, because that sounds like, well, you know, you got to look forward, not backward. But FDR is the one who made the Democratic Party what it was over the past 60 years, the coalition-building party of the working and the middle class. And I think Kucinich is the natural heir to that that sort of Roosevelt Democratic Partyism. What the hell am I trying to say here? I don't know. Kathy's looking at me like, where are you going? So I would hope that if there is a Dean administration, that there will be a policy position, not something, you know, just a handoff, but a policy position where Dennis Kucinich, he's young, he's got great ideas, he is a progressive, by just a definitive progressive, and I would hope a Howard Dean presidency would include a Dennis Kucinich. That's all I'm trying to say. Tracy is calling from Silver Springs, Maryland. Hey, Tracy.
Hey, Mr. Malloy, how you doing?
Mr. Malloy?
I know. I say that.
You do it just to ring my chimes.
No, that's a great interview with Dennis Kucinich.
Thank you.
The one thing I wanted to say, because you live in my hometown, and, you know, there's been this talk quickly about, you know, the bellyaching, well, not bellyaching, and it's a valid point about how the Democrats need to reach out to white Southerners. And
right.
But I think in 2004, this is what I think. As a Southerner, I think the Democratic Party needs to write off the South, win over, if they win over white Southerners with policies, but write off the South for this year. Yeah, the nominee, whether it's Dean or whomever, needs to make some perfunctory appearances throughout the South, but write it off, come up with a strategy, concentrate on Ohio and West Virginia. Terry McAuliffe, whom I have issues with, but he said something that was very good. He said that Pennsylvania is more important than Mississippi and Kentucky combined. So I just wanted to know what you thought about that. I don't think the Democrats need to turn their back on white Southerners, period. Mm-hmm. But for this strategy, I mean, concentrate on Arizona, Colorado, you know, mm-hmm. where they're just in striking distance.
Well, I think that makes sense, although, like you, I have issues with Terry McAuliffe, too. And being white and living in the South mm-hmm. and being registered voter down here, mm-hmm. you know, I understand what that means. But I think there's some truth to that. And here's where I think the truth is: pandering to white Southerners by the Democrats has got to stop.
Yeah.
If white Southerners are so hell bent
exactly.
on becoming Republicans, then let them.
Yes.
Let them, because it is the Republican Party that is destroying. White Southerners. It's not Democrats. It's these god awful Republicans. So
once they get screwed enough, they'll know. And this is the thing: is that African Americans in the South, Mike.
Hey, let me put you on hold. Let me put you on hold. I got a break here. I'll come back and we'll finish this up, Tracy, in just a second.
Irritating it can be, which is
why you want to feel relief fast. I mean, the instant maximum strength Mylanta liquid hits your throat, you can feel it rushing right to where you need it.
Ah, the cool liquid hits the back of your throat, and you know you're feeling something
velvety smooth, soothing that burning inside you. Mylanta's wonderful, wet, drenching sensation
restores and refreshes in a most glorious fashion.
Try maximum strength Mylanta.
Soothing at the
speed of life.
When Ann and Mike began looking for their dream home, someone else was there to help make it a reality. While Ann took virtual tours on Realtor.com, someone was there to check comparable listings. While Mike was searching for their homeowner's policy, someone was there to preview houses as they came on the market. And when Ann and Mike found their dream, someone else was there to make sure it didn't slip away. When you're ready to buy a home, work with someone who'll work with you. We're Realtors. Real estate is our life. Only Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
This report is sponsored by Pfizer and Viagra, sildenafil citrate. You've seen the signs as they leave the doctor's office. The spring in the step, the look of relief, spontaneous whistling. The technical term for this condition is, what took so long-itis? In layman's terms, it's what happens when you finally ask your doctor about Viagra. To experience the skipping, whistling, and sense of relief, ask your doctor about Viagra, and if a free sample is right for you. To learn more, go to Viagra.com.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to That Comic Book Show and envisioning two fat guys in tights, priceless.
Listen to That Comic Book Show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
My name is Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now, 1-800-865-8449.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. I understand that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens have been listening to that Mike Malloy person pollute this great nation's airwaves for 3 hours every night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Surely you can find a more productive use of your evening hours, like organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly in your victory garden. Or you could spend the 3 hours simply standing in your yard, saluting the flag on your house, apartment, or trailer, or whatever you little people live in. I'm told some chronic Malloy listeners have found it helpful to repeatedly snap a little rubber band against the soft flesh of their wrists every night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time when they feel the unnatural and un-American temptation to turn on the Mike Malloy Show. I'm certain in time you'll find the method that works best for you and your family. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
The Tom Hartman Show.
We have Bob in Texas. It's called Bob. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
You know, it's just wonderful to hear your show. I got the Sirius Satellite Radio because of this channel, and your show is worth every cent of it.
Well, thank you.
It's really nice to hear a radio show that, for one thing, you don't have to throw things at, you know, after a little while. You're talking about ideas and about historical context of what's going on, and that's so important. You don't hear this kind of intellectual, this level of thought anywhere else on the radio, and I sure appreciate it. But the big thing I keep worrying about is we have to, I mean, I think Al Franken's right in that we have to, we've been taking it and we've been taking it, and they've slimed us for so many years, and we can't take it anymore.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Free radio, only with Mike Malloy.
It's about 5 before the hour. And don't forget, the third hour of our program tonight will be a replay of a best of one of the hours of Tom Hartman program. We are going home. All right, back to Tracy in Silver Springs. Tracy, I agree with your position that the Democrats at some point have got to stop pandering to these knuckle-dragging white Southerners and just say, look, If you want to vote for racism, if you want to vote for this and that, then go ahead and be a Republican.
Sure.
And the Democrats have got to, and I think this is where Dennis Kucinich is strong, and I think this is what Howard Dean was trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the media immediately screwed up what he said, but
right.
what he was trying to say was, I think, to the Confederate flag decal-wearing, truck-driving, gun rack in the back of the pickup truck, white Southern boys, the Democrats.
We have issues.
Yeah, and the Democratic Party offers a better solution to your problems. You're an American first. You may think
exactly.
You're a Southerner, but you're an American, and the Democratic
exactly.
Party has solutions to your problems.
Yeah.
So I tend to agree. I hate to agree with Terry McAuliffe, but I tend to agree that one West Virginia or one Pennsylvania equals.
Or your home state, Mike. If the Democrats win, that's going to be a battleground state, Ohio, and screw the South just for 2004, and then try and bring these people around. Otherwise,
yeah, because I hate to see that kind of division in this country. We've gone through it before. We're still reeling from 1860. We're still reeling. The war between the states. We're still reeling from slavery and racism, and I don't know if this country can ever heal itself.
Yeah.
But I hate Republicans. One of the specific reasons is because how they starting with Nixon. Nixon figured out how to make it a national policy.
Goldwater.
But going back to Goldwater, going back to Strom Thurmond and the Dixiecrat Party when they decided it's time to drive white Southerners crazy, and here are the issues that we're going to use to drive them crazy.
Yeah,
and it's
a
damn shame.
All right, take
Thanks.
Care, Mike.
All right, Tracy, thank you. I appreciate you checking in. Yeah, we are going to go home. The next hour, right after the break, if you stick around, you'll hear a rebroadcast of a Tom Hartman program, Best of. Stick around for that. Program tonight was engineered in Detroit by Steve Damshorter, produced here in Atlanta by Catherine Bay, and Robin Bittman announces for it. Mark Marshall is a webmaster at MikeMalloy.com. Check it out. And Jim in Arkansas is our music bureau chief. I'll see you tomorrow night. I hope. I may be out sick, but I hope. I really hope. Take care.
Listening to Mike Malloy on the IE America Radio Network. Copyright 2003.
What do you think I like about communing with nature as much as I do, being on the tractor as much time as I do, or spending time with the animals?
Spitting diesel into the ozone layer? Yeah, you're at one with nature.
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature, and you will atone.
On the IE America Radio Network.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. Some of you may be alarmed by subversive propaganda spread by that liberal media filter, Mike Malloy, who distorts the truth every weeknight at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Rest assured, our sources at Fox News confirm that we have a fabulous, booming economy and enjoy daily glorious victories in the numerous fronts of the ongoing terror wars. And besides, any problems we're experiencing are all Clinton's fault. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
Former Vice President Al Gore is endorsing Howard Dean for the Democratic presidential nomination, adding momentum and political prestige to Dean's front-running campaign. 5 weeks before Iowa's kickoff caucuses, Gore is appearing with his former party rival in New York City's Harlem neighborhood before flying with Dean to Cedar Rapids, Iowa for a formal endorsement, several Democratic officials said Monday on a condition of anonymity. Dean will then fly to New Hampshire in time for the final Democratic debate of the year. A car bomb attack in a barracks near the northern city of Mosul early Tuesday wounded 31 American soldiers, mainly with flying debris, the military said. The injuries were not life-threatening. The attack occurred when a car drove to the gate of the base of the 3rd Brigade of the 101st Airborne Division in the town of Talifar, 30 miles west of Mosul, spokesman Major Trey Kate said. Guards opened fire on the vehicle and it blew up. A total of 31 soldiers were wounded, mostly by debris and flying glass. None of the injuries were life-threatening, Kate said. Republican Bill Janklow, a dominating figure in South Dakota politics for nearly 30 years, was convicted of manslaughter Monday for speeding through a stop sign at a rural intersection and colliding with a motorcyclist. Janklow quickly announced he will resign from Congress on January 20th, the same date he is scheduled to be sentenced. He could get up to 10 years in prison. Jurors in the congressman's boyhood hometown convicted Janklow of second-degree manslaughter, reckless driving, running a stop sign, and speeding for the August 16th crash. They killed Randy Scott, 55, a farmer from Hardwick, Minnesota. Prosecutors said Janklow was traveling more than 70 miles per hour in a white Cadillac when he crashed with Scott's Harley-Davidson. Rocker Ozzy Osbourne underwent emergency surgery at a hospital in Britain after suffering serious injuries in an all-terrain vehicle crash on the grounds of his estate at Buckinghamshire, his publicist said on Monday. During examination, doctors found that Ozzy had broken his collarbone, 6 ribs, and a vertebrae in his neck, according to his publicist. The injuries are not considered life-threatening. The 55-year-old rocker was injured while riding the all-terrain vehicle during a day off from promoting his new single. More news after this.
Military veterans deserve better. They must wait endlessly for basic health care from the Department of Veterans Affairs. If you or a military veteran you know is one of the many heroes waiting for VA health care, the American Legion wants to tell your story to your elected officials in Washington, D.C.
A dog from Middlesex County is probably feeling like a lucky pooch, though she smelled like trash, after being rescued from among 40 tons of household waste in the back of a garbage trailer. The dog, plucked from the garbage truck at the Edgeboro landfill, was badly shaken but unharmed from her ordeal. The dog was taken to a local kennel, where she has taken to another kennel resident, a one-eyed pit bull.
For IE America Network News, this is Michael Stinson in Los Angeles.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
While Mike was putting up his own for sale sign, someone was helping his neighbors, John and Diane, with plans to sell their home. As Mike spent Saturday figuring out legal agreements and guessing his home's value, someone was preparing a counteroffer so John could help at the school fundraiser. And while Mike and his wife were reevaluating their asking price for the third time, someone was closing the sale on John and Diane's home. Work with someone who will work with you. We're realtors. Real estate is our life.
Dick Cheney, Rummy Rumsfeld, Colin Powell, and Condi Rice aren't the only fierce hawks in George W.'s warmongering government, and the Pentagon is not the only federal force that Bush has unleashed to attack a foreign foe in the name of defending the homeland. Here's the name of another hawkish generalissimo, Mark B. McClellan. Who? Okay, Mark's a dimmer light in George's galaxy of self-styled tough guys and gals, but he's no less committed to Bushko's agenda of global empire, in which all other countries are expected to do our bidding, or else. McClellan is Bush's commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration, and to protect you and me, he says, he has launched his own war against a rogue nation that he says threatens the very safety of the American people, Canada. Canada? A people so gentle that their national flag features a maple leaf? What threat are they? Well, huffs Generalissimo McClellan, Canadian pharmacies sell prescription drugs at prices 30 to 50% cheaper than what drug makers sock us with here in America. So? Well, he says, online businesses in our country are allowing America's consumers to buy their medicines through Canada rather than paying the rip-off prices charged here in the homeland. So? Well, he sputters, the drug industry does not like this, so it must be stopped. Thus we have the remarkable sight of our FDA commissioner attacking Canada so the drug giants can keep overcharging Americans. Of course, McClellan claims that is for our own good because, he says, those dastardly Canadians might be shipping unsafe drugs to us. In retort, the Canadians note that practically all of the medicines they ship are made by American companies under the FDA's own supervision, and that Canada has excellent drug safety laws. This is Jim Hightower saying, Mark's not defending us, he's protecting the drug price gougers, who happen to be one of Bush's top campaign contributors.
Tia Carrera is on the front in Playboy. I think what you have done is give a little more license to people who have a few more years on them.
Probably. A few more years on them.
Well,
stop. A few
stop.
More years
no,
on
no,
them.
No, no, no. I'm talking about now.
Like the tread on a tire.
Yeah, never mind. I can't make it better.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
On the IE America Radio Network.
You're listening to a rebroadcast of an earlier program, so don't call today, and thanks for listening.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome to our program. Here's
America.
Drunken George Bush.
Where people like that be allowed to unite. Beautiful people, yes. Beautiful people. God bless America, yes. This being election year, you know, they're wonderful people.
1992. There's a video that's on thesmokinggun.com.
Very mundane people, but...
Well, give me one little story about Jamie.
Very boring. Very boring person. But a wonderful person, but very boring.
Any Mike Wee stories?
Very boring person. Hates to drink, doesn't like to smoke.
Yeah, George Bush drunk. You can find him on... it's going to be interesting to see if this makes its way around the web. It's from the
thesmokinggun.com. Smokinggun.com is a different website. Go to thesmokinggun.com. And apparently it's a clip of a wedding that he was at. In fact, at the end, after he gives his little drunken speech, he chugs down a drink. So, but this was, you know, considerably after, as I recall. Well, I don't know. But there it is. Anyhow, welcome to our program. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Our program today brought to you by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX, M-A-C-S, and the Organic Wine Company, 1-888 Eco Wine. I want to today, enough of George Bush drunk. Today is day 148 in the search for the person who, in the White House, who outed Valerie Plame, the wife of Ambassador Joe Wilson, who had this to say.
At the end of the day, it's of keen interest to me to see whether or not we can get Karl Rove frog marched out of the White House in handcuffs.
And it's looking increasingly like there may be a candidate who can replace George Bush, and by virtue of doing so, can actually then maybe hold some hearings or investigations into things that happened during the Bush administration. Or is Bush going to pull a Jerry Ford and pardon all of his guys on the way out? I don't know. But anyhow, now we have Al Gore endorsing Howard Dean.
I'm very proud and honored to endorse Howard Dean to be the next president of the United States of America. I want to do everything I can to convince anybody that is interested in my judgment about who among these candidates has the best chance to win.
And so Al Gore saying, hey, Howard, go for it. Go for it. And hopefully he will. I believe it's 10 minutes after the hour. I believe I mentioned this is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We are broadcasting live, coast to coast, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception on the nation's largest nationally syndicated daytime progressive talk show, streaming live around the world on the internet, ieamericaradio.com, radiopower.org, 91 countries and counting, listening regularly, Live365.com, streaming down from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite, stream 145, Sirius left, coast to coast, border to border, and from coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations on your good old-fashioned real live radio. I spent most of yesterday in a real radio station. It brings it back, you know. I love transmitters and, well, anyway, on the IE America Radio Network. Today, I want to juxtapose a 1952 speech that Harry Truman made, March 29, 1952. It was actually a speech where he announced that he wasn't going to run for re-election. But he said some marvelous things before he said that. And I want to juxtapose that with the news of the day in the area of the economics and what the Republicans are up to and what's going on. And so to start out, here we have this article in the Arkansas News Bureau. This is actually, you know, an interesting, you know, Alabama's right next to Arkansas, and Muscle Shoals, most of you are not old enough to remember, 1921. I'm not old enough to remember it. I had to look it up. But in 1921, there was a dam. Prior to that, there was a dam built at Muscle Shoals, Alabama. $46.5 million is what it cost to build this thing. And Henry Ford made an offer. This was during the Roaring Twenties. Made an offer to buy that dam and build an auto factory there. It was one of those deals like you see that are so common today, where corporations come in and they say, "We'll bring some jobs in if you'll give us the moon. If you'll just eliminate the taxes and give us part of the commons for free and just, you know, sell it off." And Henry Ford wanted to buy this dam for $5 million, even though the taxpayers had paid $46 million for it, and he was thwarted in that. And a little later on, you're going to hear Truman refer to Muscle Shoals, and it's an example of the selling off of the commons that happened in the 20s. But I'll let Truman tell you about that in his own words. But to open this, Jack Moseley, wrote this piece called The National Debt and Other Staggering Concerns that's in the Arkansas newspaper, Stephens Media Group Company, this on Monday, December 8th. He says, I'd like to talk to you about that $23,467 that you owe. In addition to the compounded interest on that debt, of course, you can expect the total amount due from you, your spouse, and each of your offspring to more than triple in the next 10 years, that $23,000. He goes on to point out he's not talking about your credit card debt. He's talking about the amount of money that George Bush has borrowed in your name and that you, not George Bush, will have to pay back. He goes on to say, this country will spend 25% more money than it collects every year for the next 10 years. That's given the current Bush budgets. Do you get that? We're spending 25% more money than we collect every year for the next 10 years. A huge share of that will be in payments on our government's borrowed debts. In other words, that $400 check some of us got from Uncle Sam, along with a reduction in our tax rates, will end up costing each of us something in excess of $65,000 apiece. Now to Harry Truman, back on March 29th, 1952.
Now I want to say something very important to you about this issue of morality in government. I stand for honest government. I've worked for it. I've probably done more for it than any other president.
This was the Jackson Jefferson Day dinner that he was speaking at, a fundraiser, $100 plate fundraiser.
Reorganize the government on an efficient basis and to extend the civil service merit system. I hate corruption not only because it is bad in itself, but also because it is the deadly enemy of all things the Democratic Party has been doing all these years. I hate corruption everywhere, but I hate it most of all in the Democratic office holder because that is a betrayal of all that the Democratic Party stands for.
And now he really starts to wind it up and get into it here. Harry Truman, President of the United States, 52.
Here's the reason. To me, morality in government means more than a mere absence of wrongdoing. It means a government that is fair to all. I think it is just as immoral for the Congress to enact special tax favors into law as it is for a tax official to connive in a crooked tax return.
Whoa, did you get that? Harry Truman, President of the United States in 1952, said it is just as immoral. It is, if you've got a tax preparer, if you've got a bookkeeper who's putting together a phony tax return, that's a crime. And Harry Truman says if Congress passes laws that give special breaks to special interests, it's the same kind of crime. He continues.
Just as immoral to use the lawmaking power of the government to enrich the few at the expense of the many as it is to steal money from the public treasury. That is stealing money from the public treasury. All of us know, of course, about the scandals and corruption of the Republican office holders in the 1920s.
This is what I mentioned earlier, the Teapot Dome scandal with Albert Fall, the secretary of, as I recall, the secretary of the treasury at the time. And the Henry Ford deal with Muscle Shoals, where they were trying to turn over to private corporations public lands.
But to my mind, the Veterans Administration scandals in those days and the Teapot Dome steal were no worse, no more immoral than the tax laws of Andrew Mellon or the attempt to sell Muscle Shoals to private owners.
The tax laws of Andrew Mellon was tax breaks for the rich, basically. He says that's immoral.
Legislation that favored the greed of monopoly and the trickery of Wall Street was a form of corruption that did the country four times as much harm as Teapot Dome ever did.
Yeah, the legislation.
Private selfish interests are always trying to corrupt the government in this way. Powerful financial groups are always trying to get favors for themselves. Now, the Democratic administration has been fighting against these efforts to corrupt the powers of government. We haven't always won. But we have never surrendered, and we never will.
And where have the Republicans been in this, Mr. Truman?
For all these years, we've been fighting to use our natural resources for the benefit of the public, to develop our forests and our public oil reserves and our water power for the benefit of all, to raise the incomes of all our citizens, to protect the farmer and the worker against the power of monopoly. And where have the Republicans been in this fight for morality in government? Do they come out and vote with us to keep the special interests from robbing the public? Not at all. Most of them are on the other side.
And that, and therein lies the problem. So, just curious. Oh, in fact, the Arkansas News Bureau article, he goes on to say, Iraq is not Europe and George W. Bush is not Harry S. Truman. You know, everybody's trying to make, or everybody, the Republicans are trying to make all these parallels between rebuilding Iraq and the Marshall Plan. And he goes on to say, you know, Iraq is not Europe. The Marshall Plan was a very different thing. And George W. Bush is not Harry S. Truman. Truman was a dedicated foe of war profiteering. A dedicated foe of it. Today, America's corporations that contribute more than $500,000 to Bush's election campaign in 2000 have been rewarded, awarded, more than $8 billion in contracts to rebuild Iraq with our money. There were no bids for these projects, of course. The Marshall Plan of the 1940s was administered by an agency independent of the White House to avoid even the appearance of political favoritism. The rebuilding of Iraq, however, remains firmly under White House control. Europe was rebuilt the way the Europeans wanted it done. But in Iraq, Americans have rejected one suggestion after another from the Iraqi Governing Council. For instance, when the telephone system collapsed, enterprising Iraqis started a cell phone system that was working very well. The U.S. ordered it shut down. I might add it was ordered shut down because we had sold rights to the Iraqi telephone system to an American company. And that American company didn't want any upstart competitors. Ruinous, dangerous competition from entrepreneurs in Iraq. No, we can't have that. That's not the Republican way. It's not just the Republicans. I mean, there's conservative Democrats who are in on this as well. This is not the conservative way, we should say. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. Stay tuned.
Rachel, and in 3 months, I dropped 41 pounds and 4 pant sizes.
My name is Linda. I went from 211 to 170 pounds in 13 weeks.
My name's Jen. I lost 51 pounds and 13 inches off my waist.
My name's Rose, and I lost 36 pounds on ultralipoline and dropped 5 sizes. Last night, I ate a chocolate cheesecake, and I felt no guilt.
I'm Dr. Sue Parker. I help people support healthy weight and cholesterol levels with ultralipoline.
I'm Catherine. And I was really skeptical until I lost 14 pounds without any heavy exercise. My cholesterol's lower. My doctor says I'm much healthier. I've got a flatter stomach, leaner thighs. And look, I mean, I'm walking down the beach without a towel around my waist.
Call now for your risk-free trial of ultralipoline at 1-800-865-8449. It's guaranteed. Call 1-800-865-8449. Lose 2 dress or pant sizes in just weeks. Call 1-800-865-8449. Call now 1-800-865-8449.
This report is sponsored by Pfizer and Viagra, Sildenafil Citrate. You've seen the signs as they leave the doctor's office. The spring in the step, the look of relief, spontaneous whistling. The technical term for this condition is, what took so long-itis? In layman's terms, it's what happens when you finally ask your doctor about Viagra. To experience the skipping, whistling, and sense of relief, ask your doctor about Viagra, and if a free sample is right for you. To learn more, go to Viagra.com.
If you've got a clogged up nose, Simply Stuffy. If you've got a snuffly nose, Simply Stuffy. If the rest of you feels fine, but your nose is out of line, give your schnozzle what it needs, Simply Stuffy.
Simply Stuffy. From the makers of Children's Tylenol. It has only the medicine your child needs to make a stuffy nose simply disappear.
If you want to smell a rose, get the stuff out of your nose. If you're sick of feeling spotty, Simply Stuffy.
Simply Stuffy. Use as directed.
See the look on Nancy's face.
What's she doing?
I asked her if she wanted a boogie, and she just gave me this condescending sneer.
Is it the condescending, I don't boogie?
How would I keep up with her?
Right.
Boogieing.
Nancy can boogie.
Yeah.
Doug, I've never seen you dance.
Kind of looks like a frog in a blender.
I could dance with you till the cows come home. On second thought, I'd rather dance with the cows than you come home.
Doug Stephan's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
The Mike Molloy Show.
According to the GAO report, many items needed to establish a laboratory for making biological warfare agents were being sold on the internet to the public from the Department of Defense's excess property inventory for pennies on the dollar. So the next time the Bush crime family says, well, it's time to invade, oh, let me close my eyes, spin me around, okay, let me point, Syria! Because they have weapons of mass destruction. Ah, this is so much fun, spin me around again. Iran! Oh, I love this game! Uncle Dick, can I play this game so much? The next time we do that, is it not incumbent upon us to ask where they got the equipment that they used to make weapons of mass destruction?
Fastag says $27 billion. It's yours for $1.29.
The Mike Molloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
You know, Jamie, if people don't listen to animal talk, things with their animals won't go well.
Oh, they won't.
No, absolutely not. You see, because a dog will poop in the corner, and then a cat will end up peeing on a pillow. Then you'll have somebody who has an iguana that turns a little red. We don't want red iguanas. We don't want poopy in the corner. We don't want cat pee. If you don't listen to animal talk, you'll have crap everywhere.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Exposing the con and conservative. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Just a little bit off topic here, but the news of the moment. In a reversal, this from the Sacramento Bee, in a reversal, Governor Schwarzenegger says he will not look into the groping charges against him. Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger on Monday said he has decided against initiating an investigation into himself, into sexual harassment allegations against him. Despite promising to do so before the October 7 election. And Rhonda Miller is not pleased. She's one of the 16 women who made a claim against him. And she's now suggesting he defamed her by saying that she was a convicted prostitute. She's nothing of the sort. And she said, and Harwell, let's see, what's the name here? This was Linnea Harwell. Schwarzenegger pinned her to her bed in her trailer wearing only his underwear when she approached him with a clipboard asking for his required signature on a form. She said he let her go only when a supervisor began calling for her over a two-way radio clip to her hip. This has nothing to do with politics, she said. She's now a museum director in Atlanta. He seemed to think that the Democrats or some other evil political force had gotten a hold of all these women. Nobody came to me from any political party. I came forward because I was asked a question and I told the truth. Well, interesting. So the Herr Gruppenführer has decided that he is not going to investigate himself. I suppose we should be reassured. Perhaps somebody else will. Time will tell. His being a Republican, the odds of his being investigated are pretty slim. It seems that Republicans can pretty much get away with anything these days. Out CIA agents, have sweetheart deals, work on the side, make hundreds of thousands, make millions of bucks. Richard Pearl, I mean, look at the, you know, the Bob Novak's, you need a scorecard. Day 302 in the search for weapons of mass distraction. See, Newsweek has now outed Dick Cheney on that one. Day 788 on the anthrax thing, day 811 in the search for Osama bin Laden. But back to Harry Truman and how Bush is mortgaging our future. This from Business Week. I mean, when Business Week, the conservative business publication, starts writing articles about like this by Christopher Farrell, how Bush is mortgaging the future, They're quoting Edward Yerendi, chief investment strategist at Prudential Equity Group. Another, you know, these are not wild-eyed liberals, right? They manage billions of dollars. And this guy says, quote, the Bush administration is doing everything that's legally possible to win a second term for the president. They've cut taxes for just about everyone. The president hasn't vetoed a single spending program passed by Congress. And then the Business Week goes on to point out, but Washington hasn't handed out goodies like this since Richard Nixon's all-out campaign to get reelected in 1972. And the comparison is worrisome. The Nixon years set the nation on a course that culminated in the devastating 1970s inflationary spiral. I'm telling you, hold on to your hat. Gold is what now, 403? It is, which means the dollar's collapsing. It's the same thing that happened after Richard Nixon did the same thing to get himself reelected in 1972. And what happened after that? Well, to quote from Business Week, the dollar depreciated, the federal budget deficit soared, and Nixon did a big giveaway, 20% increase in Social Security benefits that year, just like the Medicare drug bill. He won in a landslide. But the legacy, I'm quoting now from Business Week, Nixon won in a landslide, but the legacy of his economic policies was disastrous for business and workers over the next 20 years or so. And then they go on to point out that the Bush administration may saddle future taxpayers with an enormous bill that could alarm financial markets, dramatically slow the economy's underlying growth rate, lower living standards, and poison politics even more than it is today. It's not, it may happen. It is already starting to happen. The rest of the world is looking at us going, whoa, something wrong here. Look at the value of the euro compared to the dollar. It's happening. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Thieves in high places. They've stolen our country, and it's time to take it back. The explosive bestseller from Jim Hightower. From King George W. to his friends at Enron, they've stolen everything. Our government, our money, and our American way of life. Hightower knows we can do better, and he's back with a new book that will make you laugh, make you mad, and make you want to take action. Thieves in High Places. A ray of hope in these dark days and a roadmap back to real democracy. Available at bookstores everywhere and on the web at jimhightower.com. Buy Thieves in High Places today and help take your country back.
You're listening to The Mike Malloy Show, 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Time, Monday through Friday on IE America Radio Network.
Some introductions can lead to trouble, especially when the newcomers wipe out the natives. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. You might not have heard of the small Indian mongoose, the cane toad, or the Brazilian pepper, but these species have caused the extinctions of many others. Daniel Simberloff is a biologist at the University of Tennessee. He says introduced plants and animals, those brought to new places by people, are one of the greatest threats to endangered species, second only to habitat loss. Simberloff says non-native plants and animals can do extreme damage after their introduction into a new environment. A prime example is the small Indian mongoose, brought to a number of islands, including Hawaii, to control rats in sugarcane fields.
It's not done a very good job of controlling rats, but it's attacked many birds, mammals, and reptiles, and some amphibians, and it's actually caused the global extinction of at least 30 species and subspecies of vertebrates in various places.
Simberloff says the U.S. Endangered Species Act is the best law in the world to provide for the rehabilitation of threatened plants and animals, but he says it does not keep potentially harmful species from being introduced in the first place.
The Endangered Species Act has been used in rehabilitation plans to have a component of the plan be to attempt to eradicate or at least lessen the populations of some introduced species that's causing the problem. But it's not been used to keep out species.
Simberloff says the federal government needs to tighten its regulation of imported plants and animals to protect native species. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
No. My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. It seems that some of our otherwise upstanding citizens are listening to the Mike Malloy Show at 9 p.m. Eastern Time every weeknight. Surely you can find a more patriotic and productive use of your evening hours. For example, organizing neighborhood watch parties to search for the terrorists who are certain to be lurking in your playgrounds and possibly hiding dangerous weapons of mass destruction in your victory gardens. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
The Mr. Rogers Parenting Book. Fred Rogers, a pleasure to have you here.
What I'm hearing you say is that you delight in creating community.
I do. I think thinking about things and working through problems and issues is an important tool.
I'm just thinking that the world could take some lessons from the Doug Steffen neighborhood.
America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
On the day he was tried, no witness testified, nothing but his own confession was the prosecutor's pride, made up of fear of rage and of outright lies. But I'm not the man. He goes free as the castle vigil goes, as they burn my
clothes. And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. We are getting active. We are taking back America. As Harry Truman pointed out, this is the absolute evidence that what goes around goes around. it's that history repeats itself. I mean, the Federalists were the party of big business. Alexander Hamilton wanting to build an industrial empire, a noble vision, by the way, but his methodology, I thought, was a little off. And then the Whigs when the Federalists collapsed, and then the Republicans when the Whigs collapsed. And they had a brief little period there from 1856, when the Republican Party was formed, until around 1870, more or less, where they were actually the party of reform. And then in 1872, the Progressives split off from the Republicans, and the Republican, what the Federalists and the Whigs had been, which was the party of special interests, big money, privileged wealth, and, well, as Harry Truman points out so well.
The Republicans make a great whoop and holler about the honesty of federal employees, but they are usually the first to show up in a government office asking for special favors for private interests and in raising Cain if they don't get them. These Republican gentlemen can't have it both ways. They can't be for morality on Tuesday and Thursday, and then be for special privileges for their clients on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
No, but they sure try. Here, this on the website of the what's it called here? Well, I'll get to it in a second. The Center for American Progress. Here we go. AmericanProgress.org. A picture that's worth $14 million. Here's the picture of George Bush signing the Medicare bill. And there's all these people standing around him. All these, this congressmen and Congresswoman Nancy Johnson and Senator Bill Frist and Orrin Hatch. And they've got nice little boxes with arrows pointing to each one of these folks. Senator Bill Frist, health industry, $550,264. Drug industry, $123,957. Senator John Brough, health industry, $118,612. Drug industry, $59,150. Now, he was a piker. Look at this. Representative Nancy Johnson, health industry, $1,418,258. She's got the biggest smile of the whole bunch. Drug industry, $336,908. Representative Billy Towson, health industry, $601,777. Drug industry, $211,200. $78,000. Denny Hastert's doing good. He's got a bit of a grin. Health industry gave him $545,985. The drug industry gave him $194,700. You know what's amazing is how cheap these guys are. I mean, the industry, the health industry and the drug industry just got handed to them billions with a B. A billion is $1,000,000,000. $1 million 1,000 times. I mean, imagine if 1,000 different people in your community all won the jackpot and each won $1,000,000. That's $1 billion. All 1,000 of them together. And the drug industry just got hundreds of billions of dollars. And how much did they pay for it? They gave Senator Charles Grassley $573,678, and the drug industry gave him $217,921. What a cheap... I mean, and then, of course, George W. Bush, the health industry gave him $7 million. Well, he's not so cheap. $7 million. To buy the president, you got to spend a little more than you have to spend to get Bill Frist. Bill Frist was only $500,000, $550,264 from the health industry. But George Bush took $7,549,695 from the health industry and $891,208 from the drug industry. And similarly, when you look at the numbers for the Republicans and Democrats who voted against this bill, you see that they got almost nothing. I mean, it was just dramatically less from these same sources. This is an example of what happens when big business gets so big that it can corrupt government. This is, you know, the founders were absolutely clear. Political power, governmental power, political power is a unique type of power which in our constitutionally limited democratic republic, in a democracy, is held by we the people. And is exercised by our elected representatives on behalf of us. And that political power, they were very clear, must never be stolen, must never be corrupted by religious power, as it had been when popes had ruled the world, and mullahs, and theocrats of every stripe, should never be corrupted by religious power. There must be an absolute wall of separation between church and state, as Thomas Jefferson said, and must never be corrupted by the power of wealth. Why Thomas Jefferson wanted there to be a ban on monopolies in commerce written into the Bill of Rights. Why the word corporation doesn't appear in the Constitution of the United States. Why every state in the Union had very, very strong laws against wealth, particularly corporate wealth. Because they had just seen this happen with the East India Company, which they had thrown out of this country in 1776. Corporate wealth rising up and exercising influence over government. Right up until the Reagan era, this was considered corruption. Back in 1952, what did Harry Truman have to say about this kind of thing?
I think the voters are going to see through this holier-than-thou disguise that our Republican friends are putting on. All the tricks of Republican propaganda cannot make the people forget that the Democratic Party has been working for their welfare.
And so now the right-wingers go, oh, yes, the Democrats are buying votes.
We're working for the welfare of the farmer. We hold to the ideal that goes back to Jefferson, that a farmer should have the opportunity to own his farm, to share in the benefits of scientific progress, and to secure a fair income for his efforts. The Democratic Party is working for the success of our free enterprise system. We have worked to prevent monopoly, to give the small businessman a fair chance.
See, this is that we have worked to prevent monopoly, to give the small businessman a fair chance. I remember when I was young, and I
say this at the risk of sounding like a geezer,
but I remember when I was a teenager hitchhiking across the United States, and every city was different. Every restaurant was unique. Every store had their own. And traveling around the world back in the 60s. And you could find all kinds of cool stuff and every place had its own flavor, its own personality. Why? Because local communities had decided that they didn't want to be homogenized and that they didn't want their businesses owned by a large out-of-state corporation that every night at midnight would push a button and suck all that money. Russ Perot's giant sucking sound. Suck all that money out of out of the tills of the local community and deposit it in bank accounts at Walmart in Little Rock, Arkansas, or at McDonald's in Chicago, Illinois. They decided, no, we don't want that. We would rather have local businesses doing local business and putting money in the local bank so that other local businesses can borrow that money and start businesses and we can have the normal, healthy cycle. But the Reagan Revolution, it was underway before then. But Reagan just kicked open the doors when he, for all practical purposes, stopped enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act. And you saw this, what was called the mergers and acquisition mania. Remember the M&A? Everybody was an M&A artist? As in mergers and acquisition. They were making millions. Michael Milken, greed is good. Merging companies, getting them bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and then squeezing the cash out of them. This was the beginning of the end of individuality and of the opportunity for small and medium-sized businesses in America to succeed. This was the beginning of the takeover of American government, of political power by corporate power. Something that can only correctly be called corruption. The corruption of our form of governance. And now we've got, you know, this omnibus spending bill here, which, again, is a crazy way to run a legislature. Each one of these individual spending bills should have been separate pieces of legislation that got voted on based on their merits, but no, they lumped this whole thing together into one giant thing and toss in all kinds of goodies, like wiping out overtime for workers who currently qualify. This is the Walmartization of America is built into this omnibus spending bill even. The long-term unemployment in November surpassed a 20-year high. After December 21st, 500,000 people are going to lose their unemployment. And what is this administration going to do about it? Nothing. There was legislation put forward by the Democrats to extend. This is going to run out the week before Christmas. 4 days before Christmas. Unemployment benefits are going to run out for millions of people across America. And the Democrats put together legislation to extend that for 6 months. 500,000 people. And Tom DeLay said he saw, no reason, end quote, to extend the unemployment compensation. Charles Rangel of New York says, somehow we can afford tax breaks for millionaires and a war in Iraq, but we can't afford the help for the unemployed. It's a disgrace. It's worse than a disgrace. It's an absolute failure of the simple and straightforward obligations of government. That is, why do we have government of, by, and for we the people? What's it all about? By the way, in our next hour, Janine Garofalo is going to be with us. If you have questions or thoughts for her, you know, be thinking about them. I want to give her a warm welcome. Armin in Florida is on the line. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. Hey, Armin, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you very much. I'd like to cover a couple points and then make a comment, if I may. Do you remember for years and years and years the other religion of the conservatives was line item veto, and mysteriously they put that thing out like a bad cigarette when Bill Clinton had it,
yeah,
and was going to use it to balance out, you know, the give and take of Congress and the economic system of our country.
No, these guys have completely surrendered any. I mean, they used to give lip service to fiscal responsibility. Now that they have the power, first time since 1952 or 54, now that they have the power, 54 it must have been, they're running amok. I mean, they're like drunks in a liquor warehouse. It's incredible.
Yeah, you'd almost think they got three other countries with natural resources on the lam ready to go.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Armin, for the call. Yeah, one quick point. I want to get back to Harry here.
Okay. One quick comment. In my opinion, the Bush crime family is exhibiting the worst case of corporate socialism that you could expect.
Yeah, well said. Thanks, Armin. I agree, and so would Harry Truman.
We're working for the welfare of the farmer. We hold to the ideal that goes back to Jefferson, that a farmer should have the opportunity to own his farm, to share in the benefits of scientific progress, and to secure a fair income for his efforts. The Democratic Party is working for the success of our free enterprise system.
Oh, we heard
this
before.
Worked
here we go.
Monopoly, to give small business, the small businessman a fair chance, and to develop our natural resources for all the people and not just for the favored few. The Democratic Party is working for the welfare of labor. We have worked for good wages in our legislation, for unemployment compensation, and for fair labor relations laws. The Democratic Party is dedicated to the ideal that every family is entitled to fair opportunities for decent living conditions. To achieve.
Yeah, and he goes on and on. But and the Democratic Party, I'd say, by and large, still is, or at least with the exception of Zell Miller, they should boot his butt out. But here, another problem, the debt in America. By the middle of 2003, households had amassed an unprecedented 115% of their disposable income in debt. In other words, the average family has debt equal to more than their income. This is mind-boggling. I mean, people are not paying off their debt. They're just paying off the interest on their debt. And they point out that college loans are a big chunk of it. Over the weekend, I was going through some of Jefferson's letters, all his stuff about the University of Virginia when he was putting that thing together, and how outspoken he was about how critical it is that any person who had the ability to attend college be given the opportunity to without any financial obligation. I mean, he was just absolutely, this was the thing that would hold together democracy. This was the thing that would make it all work. And it's, you know, we got a problem here. So now the workers in the Kinchi Industrial Park, a leading Chinese toy maker, made a decent salary, rarely get, this from the New York Times, rarely get work nights or weekends, and often hang out on the street, play ping pong, and watch TV. That turns out it's a lie. I'll tell you about it after the break. This is remarkable. Maybe we'll move this to the third hour, but this the Etch-a-Sketch scandal. It so beautifully portrays what's going on in the United States and around the world right now as the result of conservative policies. Stay tuned. This is Tom Hartman.
Oh, hon, this cold.
Here, take NyQuil. You'll sleep like
okay up there.
You'll sleep like
need
a.
Need more tissues.
Sleep like a.
Cover your mouth.
Like you did before your mother moved in.
Oh, so you'll wear that red nightie?
I heard that.
Give me that.
NyQuil, the nighttime sniffling, sneezing, coughing, aching, stubby head, fever, best sleep you ever got with a cold medicine. Use as directed. Now try new and improved liquid caps.
Look, anything related to my physical well-being, I get a second opinion. And that includes the laxative I use. So when I asked my doctor which one he recommended, he didn't hesitate. Colace Stool Softener Capsules. Then I asked my neighborhood pharmacist. She said the same thing. Colace Capsules. Now that's two people who I believe know what they're talking about, recommending one laxative. Colace Capsules.
For more information on the number one stool softener brand recommended by doctors and pharmacists, go to ColaceCapsules.com.
If your hacking just won't stop, simply cough. If you're honking like a duck, simply cough. If the rest of you feel fine, but you're coughing all the time, and it's waking up your sister, simply cough.
Simply cough. From the makers of Children's Tylenol, it has only the medicine your child needs to make a cough simply disappear.
If your throat is all a tickle and you're really in a pickle, then you're hacking off a packing, simply cough.
Simply cough. Use as directed.
Do you dig your dog, but your dog digs your rose bushes?
Does Hole in the Head have your Oscar?
Is your cat doing a Tarzan swing from your drapes?
Is your python pooped?
Do you hate your folks because they spent your college tuition on a European vacation?
Jamie, what does that have to do with Animal?
I don't know. I kind of ran out of stuff.
Now, come on, this is a commercial for a major radio network. We can do better.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Ow.
Are you fed up with the Imperial Bush White House, the timid Democrats, the spinnable national media? Then you should join Bill Clinton, Molly Ivins, Tom Brokaw, and other insiders who turn to the Washington Monthly Magazine for journalism that isn't afraid to shake some sense into the system. I'm Paul Glastras, editor of the Washington Monthly, and if you're hungry for the inside scoop on what's really happening in Washington and what can be done about it, you need to read the Washington Monthly. We're not a subsidiary of some giant corporation or a mouthpiece for ideologues. We're an independent voice willing to say what needs saying, and we break big stories, from Bill Bennett's gambling habit to the real reasons we went into Iraq. Read the Washington Monthly to find out how to make capitalism work for everybody, how to achieve universal health care, how to win the war on terrorism without losing our rights. James Carville says, if you only get one magazine subscription this year, buy the Washington Monthly. If you get another, buy two. Visit our website at www.washingtonmonthly.com or call us at 1-815-734-5817, the Washington Monthly.
We here at IE America Radio Network make sure that our listeners are informed about many different subjects in many different ways. And this is why we partner with Earthwatch Radio, to bring you environmental research and related topics in concise two-minute reports that are scientifically accurate, clearly written, and played at the bottom of every hour here on IE America Radio Network. But did you know that you can get even more great information about the environment and related issues at www.ewradio.org? This website contains an enormous amount of information on a wide range of subjects that concern science and the environment. Earthwatch Radio gives special attention to the global climate change, the Great Lakes, and the oceans, and it's all information that you need to know about. So get informed by going to www.ewradio.org and listen to the Earthwatch Radio two-minute program at the bottom of every hour, every day, here on IE America Radio Network. It's our world. Let's learn how to take care of it. If you can't listen to the Earthwatch Radio program on your radio station, you can listen to it on our website's live streaming at www.ieamericaradio.com.
Hi, this is Ed Zelenak, and I'm a lawyer. That's my 12-step program. And if you break out in a rash at the mere suggestion of talking to a lawyer, then you need to join in the Legal Huddle, where I'll be your Sunday morning quarterback as we make a 100-yard dash through the American legal system, where myths will be demystified and red tape will be shredded. Join me for mirth, merriment, and a little bit of contempt of court, Sundays 9 to 11 on the IE America Radio Network.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with an important public service announcement about sleep deprivation. Many of you are not obtaining the 10 hours of nightly sleep necessary for true patriotic Americans like my husband Georgie because you're staying awake to listen to the Mike Malloy Show from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time. This dangerous behavior puts you at risk of daytime blackouts, diminished worker productivity, ghastly hallucinations, and erectile dysfunction. So when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
The America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
You win a prize for that. For telling lies like that. So well that I'm leaving, and I never felt cheated.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Ruse in Toyland, Chinese Workers' Hidden Woe. This the New York Times. An excellent piece. Two articles in the New York Times that create this just absolutely startling juxtaposition. Both of them by Joseph Kahn. And the first is about how the workers who are making the Etch-a-Sketch machines, or toys, in Shenzhen, China, in the Qingke industrial area, are basically slave labor. Mostly teenage migrants from internal provinces work more hours and earn about 40% less than the company claims. They sleep toe-to-toe in tiny rooms. They staged two strikes recently. Most do not have pensions, medical insurance, or work contracts. And they're paid 24 cents an hour. The legal minimum wage is 33 cents. So they're getting less than the minimum wage, which is why they're holding a strike. And they're required to work 84 hours a week without overtime pay. Now, this is to make the Etch-a-Sketch machine. And then the article goes to the city in Ohio, in Bryan, Ohio, where the Etch-a-Sketches used to be made, where this was the major industry in town. And now they talk about, because Etch-a-Sketch has moved to China, in a small town like Bryan, the pain was shared. Bryan's tax base is eroding from the loss of manufacturing and a population drain. The Bryan Times is full of notices of home foreclosures and auctions. The town's central square is in repose. The drugstores, real estate offices, and bars look more like relics than marketplaces. It tore our hearts out, said the William Killigan. Kilgallen, the owner of the company, the Etch-a-Sketch company. We ate with these people. We went to church with them. For some of them, this was the only job they ever had. But he said he had to go to China in order to get the price of his product down to the point where Walmart would buy it. The Walmartization of America. And this is not just, you know, an evil corporation. Government policy is what allows this to happen. And government policy should be being set by you and me, by we the people. Not by huge multinational corporations, not by Walmart. It's time for a change. 2004 in November, we will change things. This is Tom Harpin on the IE America Radio Network.
Square. It's coming from a field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the...
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This representative sampling from yesterday addressed to Dudley Do-Right.
Yes, sir, Inspector.
You must be a miserable person. You think everybody is out to screw you. You don't like the Republicans, George W., government authority, police, fire, CIA, FBI, NSA, phone companies, airlines, successful people. The list goes on and on and on and on and on.
On the IE America Radio Network.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush with a helpful hint to resist the wicked and shameful addiction that causes some of our otherwise mentally healthy